There have been various attempts at PC Bumani before, Konami Hawaii's DDRPC in the early 2000s, and the more recent DDRV in your browser. But on the heels of successful launches of 2DX Infinitas and Sound Vortex Cloud, the next on the list is Gitadora. Now, I'm waiting to hear about 3 conga drums becoming available. I may be slightly facetious about that, but that isn't something you'll have to constantly put up with from your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, as they bring you the rest of tonight's news right now on the show where every gamer has a voice.
Friends out there on the internet, welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. We are back once again tonight with Orange Lounge Radio, episode number 831 for this August 9th of 2020. My name is Rob Roberts, and I'm joined via Discord, because we're still doing the whole social distancing thing, with my co-hosts here to talk about video games and gaming news and all that, starting off with Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good. It's good to see you. I can actually see you, thanks to the magic of Discord and the television that's over on the side here, because we do tape.
I didn't do anything fancy.
No wigs tonight. That's okay. You can't.
No wigs, no extra makeup. I'm just me.
Just, you're just au natural tonight, which
normal
is all
girl.
Good. Normal girl. because we do tape live, if you want to see the video, every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show over at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. And for those of you that do tune in on Twitch, you might notice there's a few things that have changed around a little bit. Number one, I don't have hair anymore or a hat. I had my Britney Spears 2006, is it, moment this week, and I just shaved my head. I was like, you know what? Why not? Quarantine's the time to do it. So I did it. And so I thought I'd show it off tonight because some folks were saying, I don't know, I'm still getting used to it. I don't know if I love it. But some folks on Instagram were like, no, it's a good look. It's good. So I'm like, all right, whatever. We'll try it. So here I am. And I have this mic stand here. So I don't know what to do with my hands. For the first time in 18 years, I don't know what to do with my hands because I'm not holding a microphone. instead, I have this mic stand, and this mic stand was donated by DJ Rama S, our pal over at Anime Jam Session, which is Tuesday nights here at the Voice of Geeks Network. A big, big thank you to Rama. I've kind of resisted the mic stand thing for a long time just because, well, the way we've always done it is with the handheld mics, and it works fine. But you know what? I need to learn to embrace change a little more because maybe I would have got on the Twitch train sooner if I'd done that or what have you. So if the listeners are like, get a mic stand, then fine. I will try the mic stand. But I don't know what to do with my hands. So I might just kind of like have them in the little scared all night or something. I don't know. I don't know what to do. Any suggestions what I should do with my hands, Dark Sakura?
Para para.
Oh, I could. Maybe if we could play some music, we could do that. All right. Let me turn to Techmaster Loki to see if there's any suggestions on what to do with the hands. Hi, Loki.
Just do nothing. Just, I don't know.
Just
keep them out of frame.
All right. Yes, I will put them down by my sides. Okay. Sit on my hands and that's fine.
There you go. Yeah. Drone says hold 2 adult beverages.
Perfect. Yes. DJ Rama S in our chat room says, your hands are free to hold 2 adult beverages. That is true. And then I also switched out the microphone to a different one. So hopefully all the sound is still good and all that. But I think this will work out fine. I'm into it. No one special in our chat says, got to say it. Leave Rob alone. Well, you know what? Here's the reality. I'm 42 years old and God was already making me bald. So, and I'm very against using like products and stuff that kind of prey on those insecurities, because if this is the way our maker made us, then whatever, right? But I just decided, you know what? Let's just try this, even though I kind of liked having what little hair I did. I don't know. The bald thing's growing on me. It'll be all right. And some folks in chat are making Hitman jokes. So sure, I could do that as a cosplay next Dragon Con. I'll dress up as Hitman. I don't know. All right. Let's see. Other comments in chat. SSG100 Matt says, waiting for someone to suggest for him to hold Smush. Well, if Smush will come in here and sit in the basket, I'll be happy to. But he's been kind of keeping to himself. Mr. Smush, instead of sitting in the basket, he has a new box lid in the hallway. And that is his favorite thing in the world. It's his new little bed. He's slept in it all week long. He loves the box lid. And the greatest thing about the box lid is it actually says on the side of it, delicious. So when he's laying on the bed, it looks like he's – all right, forget it. SSJ 100 Matt says you can still cosplay as Sami Zayn. He also has a shaved head now. Oh, that's good. I still have the WrestleMania shirt and all that stuff that I wore at that one Dragon Con. So there was that. So – all right. Anyhow, let's get into our kickoff topic tonight, because believe it or not, we do talk about video games once in a while here on this show. Let's talk about what happened at the State of Play this week. So Sony did like a little direct of sorts, if you want to kind of copy Nintendo Direct style, which is everybody's doing these days. PlayStation did their own direct, but they were very clear in advance. No PlayStation 5 info. This is,
which means people were immediately disappointed because no one reads those or they expect surprises, just like that last Nintendo Direct where they said, listen, it's only going to focus on third-party titles. Like, why, you didn't announce a new Metroid or F-Zero? What the heck?
Did we or did we not get Godfall, though? So there was a PlayStation 5 thing that snuck in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, but Godfall's been like, they've shown Godfall like several times and it's kind of boring looking.
I don't, so am I the only one that doesn't hate Godfall, like what I've seen of it? Like, I don't hate it.
I'm just indifferent.
Yeah, I get where people are like, this is kind of like, I look like I've seen this before. What's so PlayStation 5 about this? But I don't know. It looks like a game I might try. I don't hate it the way the rest of the internet does, but that's how I often feel about video games these days.
I don't hate it, but it doesn't look interesting to me. I don't know.
All right, fair enough. Well, what else?
This looks very generic. So they had a few other trailers. So there's one that I've actually seen quite a few times, was The Pedestrian, which is kind of a platformer game that takes place in street signs. That was kind of neat. There is a new expansion for Control. Is it AWE or AWE, I guess, which is coming out at the end of this month.
The Alan Wake expansion.
Whatever. Okay, so the Alan Wake expansion, yeah, that's going to be coming out at the end of the month.
If you're a Remedy fan, that's a pretty big deal. Like, Alan Wake was a game a lot of people slept on unnecessarily, and it was really good. And to be fair, I'm sleeping on Control still. I just haven't gotten around to playing it, but I really need to. Like, Remedy always has put out quality products. Quantum Break, a lot of people slept on too, and that was a really good game. So I don't know what's happening, why people keep sleeping on the Remedy stuff, but I want to check out Control for sure.
We got some gameplay footage of Bugsnax, which was interesting.
Yeah, it's like a first-person ape escape, right?
Sort of, yeah. And then they announced that Star Wars Vader Immortal is coming to PlayStation VR, which makes sense, I guess. I think that came out originally on the Quest, so it's... you know, it's cool that it's coming to other platforms. Spelunky 2's got a date on PlayStation 15th. September 15th is coming out on PlayStation 4.
That was a pleasant surprise. I was really happy to hear that Spelunky 2 is a thing. I mean, of course it's a thing. But I feel like, you know, Spelunky's been out. God, that game's been out at least 5 years. That goes back probably longer. It goes back to the early days of the PlayStation 4. And I really feel like that game, like, kind of like a lot of stuff came after it that really invokes Spelunky. I don't know if that's just the roguelike thing, you know, like every roguelike feels like it has some similarities, but I feel like Spelunky really kind of paved the way of sorts. So it's nice to see it getting like an official sequel.
And talk about like old indie games coming back. But apparently there's an anniversary edition of Braid being made for the PlayStation 5. I believe actually it's also coming out on other platforms as well, but that's coming out early 2021. So yeah, they're going to release that on pretty much all the platforms. So.
I like how it's just Braid Anniversary Edition, because if I am doing my math right, that game originally came out in 2008, I believe. So that game is 12 years old. So it's not really
pretty long.
It's not really the 10th anniversary or the 15th anniversary. It's just an anniversary.
Right. And then they announced, along with Hitman 3, there's going to be a VR portion of that as well. So it's going to have a VR mode, which apparently allows you to play missions from the entire trilogy. So that's kind of cool. Crash Bandicoot 4, they showed some more gameplay with that and talk a little bit about that as well. And it's a direct sequel to Crash Bandicoot Warped. And it looked kind of cool. What else? We had a new game, The Pathless, being shown. So they kind of did a little bit of a gameplay walkthrough of that. let's see, a game called Genshi Impact and Anno, I don't even know, Mutationum, I guess. And that's going to be coming out on PlayStation 4 at the end of the year there. And
Pele Hanameo says DLC for Outer Worlds due out this month. But didn't the Xbox series have that? Or maybe they probably didn't date it in the Xbox announcement. But I feel like it was...
The Outer Wild? Or, yeah, Outer Worlds. Yeah, I don't think they dated it.
Okay.
No, I don't think it said when
so
it was.
So now they dated it.
Made the announcement.
Got it.
And then I know this one was something that I saw on PC at one point, but apparently Temtem, which is kind of a Pokemon clone, is coming to PlayStation 5 next year as well.
That's and then there's subtly kind of a big deal, I think. I know that's a weird way to phrase it, but I think the fact that, you know, Temtem has gotten big enough that it's justifying a PlayStation release to really kind of take on, I don't want to say take on, but really respond to maybe one of Nintendo's like biggest franchises. I think that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, and then they showed Godfall, and then of course there was another announcement, Hood Outlaw and Legends, which is a medieval PlayStation 5 game coming out next year. Mm. And Auto Chess, apparently there was a trailer for that as well.
So ActDeft is in our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork and is clarifying that the Temtem release on PlayStation 5 was a Kickstarter goal. I didn't thank you for clarifying because I didn't follow that Kickstarter, so I didn't know that they'd already promised the releases on console. I still find it interesting, you know, for something that's essentially a Pokemon clone, to which ActDeft says it is a Pokemon clone, but it has fallen off quite off the radar. I thought it didn't it have some like weird bumps in the road when it came out on PC? Like I don't want to make
remember.
Stuff up, but I feel like it had like a rough kind of launch week.
I'm not sure.
ActDefs clarifies it's early access. Oh, well, then problems are to be expected, I suppose.
And then one other confirmation that came out of that as well is that talking about backwards compatibility with some of the peripherals. So they said that basically arcade sticks and other specialty peripherals will work with PlayStation 5 titles, but DualShock 4, those controllers are only going to be compatible with PlayStation 4 games. So that's kind of disappointing. I'm surprised, though, that that's going to be the case. And I'm, you know, considering that there was that extra two back button add-on that they had for the PlayStation 4 DualShocks, I'm wondering if maybe that's going to add some sort of compatibility with the PlayStation 5 games as well, or maybe not. I don't know.
It's hard to say, but has PlayStation ever done the upwards compatibility? Like the 3 controllers don't work on a 4 and 2s don't work on a 3. So I'm not.
Yes, they did on the PlayStation 1 controllers. Those DualShocks worked on the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
The only downside for that is it may not work necessarily perfectly because the PlayStation 2 face buttons were analog versus digital buttons that were on the PlayStation 1 DualShock controller. So, for example, I think like Gran Turismo and some of those games actually responded to how hard you push on the buttons on those.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the only difference. But I don't think there's that many games that use that. And honestly, I used to use my PlayStation 1 DualShock controllers all the time with PlayStation 2 games and never knows from. So, yeah, that was probably the only time that they had, like, forward compatibility. And I guess if you count the PlayStation Move controllers, because they just haven't come up with something better yet. But that's about the only thing.
Fifth Dream in chat says, consoles come with controllers. This is fake outrage. I don't know if I'd go so far as say fake outrage. I would put it in the category of aw bummer. Like, oh, bummer, but it's not a deal breaker for me, because you're right. I'm going to get a controller with the system anyway, and... You know,
it's still a point of contention because you look at like the Xbox One and the Xbox Series X. The Xbox Series X is backwards compatible with the Xbox One controllers. You can use those on that system. So that is something like I know for if you're just playing single player, that it's probably not a big deal because, yes, it does come with a controller. But like if you're like me, I bought controllers for my entire family. So that's four controllers I have to replace. Assuming I was going to do that, probably wouldn't. But you know, let's say that was, you know, that is an additional expense that I need to spend money on, because if I want to replace that, to have that same type of gameplay, then I need to buy additional controllers, which, you know, hopefully aren't going to be too expensive. But it's still something like, then you're gonna have additional controllers lying around as well. It would be nice if they worked with it.
Yeah.
But whatever.
That's where my head is at. Is like, oh, it's nice when it happens that way, but it didn't, you know, oh, well, usually they don't. Like, it's more often than not, they don't work upwards. So.
Right. And it could make sense, too, because when you look at the Xbox games, you know, the Series X, most of those games are going to launch, you know, on both the Xbox One and on the Xbox Series X. So they have to have that compatibility between the two because they're going to be on both of those platforms at the same time, whereas Sony doesn't have that. And there's additional functionality in those controllers that they can't necessarily do without. It would kind of break those games if it didn't have it in there. So I understand it. It just kind of sucks, but it's
a bummer. That's it.
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, well, that's, yeah. Wish it wasn't like that.
But I also feel like, you know, it'll be offset. You know, Sony hasn't revealed all the secrets of the controller and the system and everything yet. You know, we know there's this thing, the jump right in the game and the potential to have like shortcuts and things. Now, obviously, that doesn't speak to the controller. But my point is there are things about this system that are still under lock and key. And I think the full secrets of that controller is one of them. So maybe it will make more sense once we know all those secrets. So that's why I'm kind of like, I'm not like, okay, like, oh, bummer. That would have been cool if it worked. And they do work for the backwards compatibility. So there is that. I'm still like, all right.
And that's fine.
It works for like, what it needs to work for.
I kind of feel like even though I don't know all of what the controller can do, I kind of feel like it's just going to be basically copying the Switch controllers.
Let's see.
The enhanced haptics. Just like that. And it's like, look, it's so amazing. It's so new. It's like, well, this is exactly what we have on the Switch. You know, I'm saying it's unique. Kind of did that with the Move controllers. Oh, it's a unique thing. We're not copying the Wiimotes. No, not at all.
Let's see what happens. There's still going to be more. I mean, obviously, we know Microsoft has got another event that they're going to have to do probably in August. And I imagine Sony's going to need to do the same thing also in August, which is the month that we're in right now. So I imagine maybe sometime around like Labor Day-ish, we'll probably get some dueling announcements. Something a little bit late breaking here, by the way. It's not on our show roll, but something I picked up on Twitter, actually, that was posted to our Discord just minutes before we went live tonight. But apparently a leak has confirmed the existence of an Xbox Series S in addition to the Xbox Series X. And what that leak is, apparently a box for one of the controllers came out, and it actually lists the Xbox Series S under it. Now, you still have to take these sort of things with a grain of salt because we know people have gone so far as to Photoshop like boxes and things like that before because people
are
crazy.
Well, they have an actual controller, though. It's like, yeah. It's, and actually is like a retail version of the Xbox.
Yeah. This one definitely seems to hold some water compared to some other things we've seen before. But, you know, again, the Twitter fake a couple weeks ago with the F-Zero thing and all that, that was a pretty good fake, too.
Well,
but
that's the more disappointing thing, though, still. Dude, we're in the year 2020, going into 2021, and we're still using 2 AA batteries for the Xbox controllers. Come on, can we please get some like rechargeable batteries, please? I mean, come on, is it going to be so difficult? We've had it for two generations already for, you know, the PlayStation. I mean, I understand that sometimes those batteries go bad and you have to replace the whole thing, but like, come on. Like, I think it should be able to be done already. I guess to keep the cost down, but like, I don't know.
Looking at some comments in chat regarding that Xbox Series S I just talked about, DJ Rama S says, wasn't that leak confirmed months ago? And Bobby Blackwell says, well, I thought that was Lockhart. Yeah, there's been the word. I mean, this is not a huge surprise because, yes, the rumors have been out there that there's this other thing they're working on, Lockhart, and it's another console that falls into the Xbox Series S or what Xbox Series line. So people are wondering is S like their diskless version of the X? We don't really know what it all entails, but it does seem to be it's going to be a cheaper offering and how they're going to get under PlayStation 5.
If I were to guess, it's going to be a redesign of the Xbox One right now, that generation of console put into the form factor of the Xbox One Series X. Kind of like how they redid the Xbox 360 at one time to kind of make it a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. I could see it something like that because I don't know, or maybe not.
I'm curious to see what Microsoft presents. I do feel like I will myself will probably get a Series X just because, you know, I'm a little more of a, I guess, hardcore. I don't like to call myself a hardcore gamer because I'm not very good at games. I just really enjoy them. So I'm a core gamer. I'm just a medium core gamer. And I feel like I'll get an Xbox Series X just because it is the more, you know, it's why I get the nicer iPhone and not the usually they put out like a more affordable model that's kind of like last year's specs, and that's cool for the people that want that, but I want the fanciest one, so I'll probably end up going with that for Xbox Series X. We'll see, but I'm curious what they're doing and what their strategy is overall, that's for sure, and how they're kind of responding to the PlayStation 5, because that competition, even though I don't like the fanboy wars, I don't like the whole PlayStation versus Xbox and the way that people behave on Twitter sometimes, I don't care for that, but just as a fan of gaming and that competition where they're kind of challenging each other to do better, that I like. And so I'm curious to see how the Xbox Series X kind of needles Sony, if nothing else. I'm very curious about that. DiGiroma S says, the Xbox Series S is a smaller, less powerful version of the Series X, but more powerful than the Xbox One S. Yeah, that's kind of, again, kind of what we're hearing is that it's probably going to be a little more like an Xbox One, but something with a little more oomph that can play the games a little better, but probably not a disc drive. That's probably one thing that we can guarantee won't be in it, but we really don't know shit until Microsoft has their official unveiling, but maybe this is going to motivate them to get that done faster. I don't know. We'll see. All right. Well, is that it for the State of Play? Is that everything? What'd you think overall?
That's pretty much it.
What'd you think overall?
I skimmed through because I forgot that it was on. I had like meetings during that time, you know, work stuff. And so I forgot that it was started. And so I had to kind of skim through it to catch up to the actual live stream. So it was all right. There's just some things like I didn't care to see trailers for, but like, it's fine. It's not for just me. There wasn't any like huge surprises. It was just kind of, it was what it was.
I think it worked nice as a bridge between the two PlayStation 5 events, especially when it comes to PlayStation VR, because I don't know if you remember when we were talking about that PlayStation 5 event, I kind of commented, I was like, you know, for all that talk about how the PlayStation VR will work with the PlayStation 5, they didn't really show anything when it comes to PlayStation 5 VR and how it works there.
Still don't know like what exactly. I mean, I don't know if they have new hardware coming out for that yet. Probably not this year, I'd imagine.
We don't. But the fact that VR is still being, you know, supported well enough to necessitate a Star Wars game, which is a pretty. I mean, then again, Kinect got a Star Wars game too. But
technically a port. It's not a. It came out on the Oculus Quest. I want
to
say
it's still a new release, and it still is something to, you know, inject life into the PlayStation VR. That says to me, yes, Sony is still pushing this forward, but we'll see what comes of it on PlayStation 5, because for all we know right now, the PlayStation 5 VR will be nothing but backwards compatibility. That's all we know, but I don't think that really is going to be the case. I think we will see some 5 stuff.
Think,
it's just we don't know it yet.
Yeah, I don't think – I think what you'll see is you'll see a little hopefully a bump in the performance of it, maybe even like the visuals, depending if the hardware is, you know, more powerful, assuming they come out with new hardware. Kind of like it was a minor bump when you had the PlayStation 4 Pro versus the regular PlayStation 4 in VR. You got some, you know, better definition in the graphics, and some frame rates were a little bit better, and there was a little bit more detail in there as well. So I'm hoping a little bit of a jump from that, and, you know, being able to run those games a little bit better. I mean, hopefully see some more immersive games, and hopefully with their improved haptics that they have in the DualShock 5, that they will add that to whatever they come up with that hopefully is way better than the PlayStation Move controllers, because God, they're so old.
Let me read this comment from chat. Fifth Dream over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, trying to sell some last minute VR units before they drop it like a Vita. I realize everybody, you know, likes to give Sony a hard time with dropping hardware because they don't have a great track record. So it's a fair criticism, but I don't see them dropping VR anytime soon. Number one, them reaffirming support for it on the PlayStation 5 is a big deal. You'll notice they didn't say shit about the Vita and the PlayStation 5. We don't even know if you can charge a Vita on a PlayStation 5. So, you know, but in all seriousness, when it comes to PlayStation VR, one big difference between PlayStation VR and PlayStation Vita is that PlayStation VR, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Bobby's in chat, so I'm sure he will say something. But PlayStation VR is the most successful VR headset. It is. They have sold more PlayStation VRs than they sold anything else. Now, granted, when it comes to PC, that market is a little more splintered because you got the Vive over here, the Oculus over here, and so on. PlayStation VR is a much more of like kind of like this baseline thing. There is just that headset for Sony, and it's a great entry-level VR thing. PlayStation Vita was never the number one selling handheld and never got there, never even got close. And I think some of that is Sony's own mistakes, but that's a conversation for another time. I just don't see them letting go of VR right now because I feel like VR is still successful. They're still number one in that department. And I'm looking at chat. Ah, yes. Thank you. Bobby says they've sold more PSVR units than Vive, Oculus, Index combined. That's what I thought. So that is why I don't see them dropping VR.
Yeah, I think they'll continue with it. I mean, we see more support for like different games and stuff that are coming out. I'm just curious to find out more about what the PlayStation 5 is going to bring to it versus, yeah, you know, the backwards compatibility.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on and get into some other topics for tonight's show, and we'll talk a little more about what Xbox is doing and Nintendo is doing. But first, let's talk about what we are doing in our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week in a segment called How Was Your Gaming Week? Dark Sakura, how was your gaming week? What have you been up to?
I have been, well, it's been a busy week for me. We've had some housey stuff, and I've had doctor's visits and stuff. They released new puzzles for Patterned on Apple Arcade, which, you know, I love that game. It's kind of one of my stress reliefs. I've gone back to playing the like Moonlight Mahjong too, just because it's, again, something mindless that I can do. I'm still doing Animal Crossing. I also have, let me look up the name, Word Swipe. I know it's like a dumb little game, but this is what it is. And I got interested in playing this from playing Words with Friends, which I need to get back to. But it's just a fun little game, and I get annoyed at it because apparently I have a better vocabulary than the game does. So I like put in a word. I know that's a word. The dictionary knows that's a word. The game doesn't know that's a word. Stupid game.
I see screenshots all the time of people with Words with Friends going, what do you mean that's not a word?
Right? Yeah. Well, I do keep, when I'm playing Words with Friends, I actually keep the Scrabble dictionary open to make sure that before I play a word, I'm playing a legit word. That's a different story. This one, they are legit words. I look them up in the dictionary. Yes, I spelled queried right. Apparently, it's, yeah, anyway. So, however, I got to play one of my favorite words, yurt. Do you know what a yurt is? It's a kind of octagonal structure, house structure, usually portable, but some people have permanent yurts.
Okay, I thought it was like a math thing. Oh, no, no. Okay, yes, in like house. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard of it before.
I used to want to live in a yurt. So I had a fun time with that one. But at any rate, I was playing that. I'm going to be sitting back down with The Last of Us once I can get some of the pain in my wrist settled down. Dan was playing Doom the other day. We got Doom on Switch. And, of course, playing on the mode that has my favorite name, Hurt Me Plenty. And it's not a yut. It's a yurt, SSJ100, Matt. Y-U-R-T. Look it up. Also, it's a reference to an old werewolf game. I used to play tabletop.
Nice.
Speaking of other gaming, we switch around some games in the house. So now Indiana Jones is in the house. I'll be putting pictures up soon. Twilight Zone is in the house. I don't know why they moved the wide bodies in, but they did. I don't know. I want to play Ghost of Tsushima, but I've got so much else going on right now that it's kind of fallen on the wayside.
One game at a time.
Yeah, well, and on top of that, I'm actually getting wheels in motion for a podcast myself and video stuff with Dan. So we've got wheels spinning in the background. More to come.
Nice. All right. On that note, we'll move over to Loki. Loki, how was your gaming week?
So my week, I played a little bit, well, more Minecraft, of course, did that. I did try to do some game development this week, but it's a big fight between, Unity and myself. So that was the majority of it for like 3 days. And then, also played some Orna. I did play a few other things. So, Fall Guys, I tried a little bit of that. So I actually did get in on one of the first few days back when the servers weren't complete garbage and played a few rounds of that. And it's all right. I think the controls are kind of a little frustrating at times. But I think that's designed that way on purpose, but it's all right. It's, I guess, kind of a fun game to play. Plus it was free PlayStation Plus. I did pick it up on PC as well, so I can play with my son who had no interest in playing with me. So, oh, well, there's that. And then, what else? Oh yeah. So yeah, then I also got, just like Bobby, the, Lego Nintendo set, and I was putting that together on the, on Twitch.
I saw your Twitch streams pop up on the VOG Discord. Yeah. That was cool. Yeah.
So we did that. So I actually do have, it right in front of me here. So it's pretty decent size, as you can see. It's got its controller and then of course, the game itself, Super Mario Brothers. So
you have to lift it up higher. We can't see.
Okay, I know. I'm trying. So you have the Super Mario Brothers right here, and then of course the game console itself.
Your green screen effect is tearing it apart, but that's we're an audio podcast anyway, so it. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. I liked how they have the little cartridge mechanism in it as well, which is pretty cool. So you can put it inside there and it actually snaps down and everything. I'm hopefully going to be doing the TV a little bit later this week. I also did pick up the Lego Super Mario Brothers sets. That I couldn't do on stream because as soon as I brought it in the house, my son wanted me to immediately build it. So we built that one and one of the expansion sets. And I still have, actually it was two of the expansion sets that we built. And I still have one more to build as well. And so he's been playing with those. But yeah, it was a pretty cool little toy. So, and I really enjoyed the set.
Bobby extensively went into the Lego stuff on his show tonight, and he said that TV took like 6 hours to build. And, you know, looking at it, it does look like it's a very like meticulous process. You kind of have to do pixel by pixel, so to speak. But the whole he was showing off the whole finished setup and everything. It looks really nice. Like, you know, the fact that it doesn't use like rubber bands and the complicated shit that Lego has done before. Like that it's all very, it's just neat. It's all really cool how it's all put together.
Yeah, I could probably speed run that. So he says that NES took him 6 hours. It took me 4 to put it together. And then the TV, I don't know. We'll see. I try to organize myself and just knock it out. So we'll see. I don't know. But you got to enjoy it. So, you know, definitely want to take your time.
All right. Is that it for your gaming week?
That is.
All right, then my gaming week. So a game I didn't play but I thought about playing because I have to respond to this in chat is No Man's Sky because I was watching Delvin, VG Realness, in our chat. Make sure you're following him on Twitch too. He was streaming No Man's Sky and playing it for the first time and kind of watching him go through it in the beginning. I kind of forget that game really does throw you in and you always start, and this is, if you didn't know this about No Man's Sky, you always start on a planet where the atmosphere is kind of hurting you, like you have a limited amount of life that's ticking down, so you have to be able to move like quick enough to figure out like, oh, I get my, you know, sodium here to refill this and so on and so on. So it's not the most kind thing. Now there are other planets you will find, and if you haven't figured this out yet, Delvin, where the atmosphere is a lot more forgiving and you can walk around for a lot longer without needing that stuff, but I always forgot, like, damn, that game really does like throw you in and it can be kind of stressful, but I still think that game is so good and so rewarding, and I really need to check out some of the changes. And I thought it was really good because Questbuster was posting some stuff to our Discord, if you haven't joined our Discord yet, check it out, vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com/discord. And folks chat throughout the week about, you know, things they heard on the show and stuff. And one of the things that Questbuster was posting about was, hey, I went and found when you and Bobby Blackwolf were both streaming this game, you built like houses on Voglandia, and I found them. Here they are, and here's what they look like right now. And I thought that was really cool. So it was neat that Questbuster's been going to that too. And yeah, VG Realness points out No Man's Sky is on Game Pass for PC and Xbox. So if you are a Game Pass person, it's high time to check that out. It's pretty cool. So yeah, shout out to No Man's Sky. I probably will visit it this week, especially because Final Fantasy 14 is going to be down all day tomorrow for the big patch maintenance. And then after that, I will probably be playing nothing but Final Fantasy 14. So I need to probably do No Man's Sky tomorrow. We'll see. So that's pretty cool. Let's see, other things that I have actually played this week. So I played a game called Undermine, speaking of Game Pass. That game just recently came to Game Pass on, I know, on Xbox One. Pretty sure it's on PC as well. Undermine is a roguelike. It kind of reminds me of Rogue Legacy, but mixed with, like, the Zelda look, like the 2.5D Zelda look, because it's more like one of those, like, top-down, and you're kind of in the dungeon going around the room. So that's a pretty good combination of games, right? If you like roguelikes and you like Zelda, I think that'll be up your alley, which is funny because I also think you have Binding of Isaac, but Binding of Isaac was a little more, if I remember right, like a shooter kind of, like, there was a lot more, like, shooty type of mechanics and different things. I feel like Undermine plays a little more like a traditional Zelda game, but you're wielding, like, a pickaxe instead of a sword, but still it makes sense. So I've been enjoying it, especially because it's a Game Pass title, so technically it's like free for me as a subscriber, so I thought that was kind of neat. One of the other games I've been playing this week, I checked out Fall Guys because that came out on PlayStation, and this game of course is doing very well on Twitch. Lots of people are streaming this game. This game seems to be getting more and more kind of like references in pop culture and so forth. I think this game is going to stand to do very well. I think this game is going to follow a very similar trajectory to Rocket League. I think it was very smart of the developers to put it out on PlayStation Plus for free, and I'm using my quotey fingers because obviously PlayStation Plus isn't free, but you know what I mean, so that they have all these people already playing it. And then now these matches are seeded, these 60-person matches. And it's great because it's a battle royale kind of game, right? But it's not a shooty-shooty-bang-bang game. So, like, I'm not great at Fortnite because I'm not really good at shooty-shooty-bang-bang since the Duke Nukem and Quake days. But this is more of a hell-style platformer. And I think it's a lot of fun. I do agree with what you were saying, Loki, that the controllers feel very rubbery. I think that's obviously, it's the aesthetic of the game. It's supposed to be rubbery and frustrating.
Yeah, my character kept tripping over, like, every once in a while, like when I was just jumping. It's like, okay, come on. Like, I get it. Like, if I hit something, then trip. But, like, just jumping, I'm going to fall over. I guess the game's Fall Guys, so, I mean, it makes sense. But it's kind of frustrating.
Bobby is also pointing out in chat over Twitch.tv/VogNetwork, they also did the Twitch marketing thing where they spent all their marketing energy on Twitch streamers, big and small. They didn't do the traditional marketing route, so some people were like, man, everyone's talking about Fall Guys that released today out of nowhere, and I don't get it. And I'm like, that's the only thing that anyone's been playing on Twitch for a week. Yeah, and it's a great combination because, oh, it's free on PlayStation Plus? Well, I'm going to go get that right now. And I think it's going to get a huge install base. And I think the next destination for this game has to be the Nintendo Switch. I think we have a story coming up later about, you know, are they going to be looking at other platforms? I don't see how they're not. And I do think if this game connects with the Nintendo Switch, which there's no reason why it shouldn't, I think it's really going to take off at that point.
Yeah, I think so.
Xbox is a little more like, obviously, it's just Xbox and PlayStation have more in common than they do different. So I don't think the Xbox is as necessary. I think it will show up there, just like Rocket League did. But I think the Switch is that key component where now you're going to have a lot of these households that only have a Switch, or there's that portability of the Switch. And I think it's going to do very, very well. I hope they consider releasing it really low cost on the Switch. I know they can't do it free. I know it's $20 on Steam. I think if they can get it even lower, release it for like $10 the first week it's out or something, it'll do very, very well on Switch. And I think this game is going to stand to do very well. So again, and if you haven't played the game, it's like you go through these levels that remind you of like either American Ninja Warrior or Wipeout or Takeshi's Castle. You know, take your pick. It's one of these type of shows. But 60 people are running it at once, and only the top 43 or something like that get to move on to the next round.
It's very much Takeshi's Castle. Yeah. That's exactly the format they use, yeah.
Yeah, and then in the next round, it's the top 30. And then the top, so it's like less and less people get to move on until there's only one winner. And I think part of the reason they can get away with giving this game away for free, they don't even need to be charging for it, is that, of course, there's a shop where you can buy cosmetics or you can buy the coins. You can either earn the coins slowly through playing the game, or if you have to have that costume right now because it's a special, you can pay real money to have that stuff. And again, I think Rocket League is following a very similar trajectory with what it's doing with its cosmetic store. So I know I keep comparing it to Rocket League when really those two games – don't have a lot in common. Well, it does have something very important in common with Rocket League, actually. It's very easy to understand how to play. Very easy to understand the rules. You don't really have to explain it to somebody. It is like you can watch somebody else play the game, hence why it's doing so well on Twitch, and you understand what's going on right away. And I think that is something it has in common with Rocket League, because Rocket League is like, oh, it's soccer with cars. Got it. You know, oh, Fall Guys, it's a wacky, zany level that's going to knock you and send you flying that looks like one of those stupid games Ellen would play on her show, you know, or something like that. And it's that, you know, but Survivor style. So it's interesting. I mean, I think the game is going to do very well. And it's sometimes those really simple ideas that do great. And I applaud them for getting to it first. Essentially, how do we do a battle royale game, but a silly platformer? There you go. They did it. So, Orange Right in chat says, it's like Takeshi's Castle or MXC Most Extreme Challenge. Sold me on the game already. It really is. Pixelpaka says, oh, I know. I bomb out on level one about 80% of the time. LOL. Yeah, I don't think I've gotten past the third stage yet. I have yet to get past the third stage. But I'm not super familiar with all the games yet. And there's the one I fucking hate is that seesaw level. There's a level where you're just running across seesaws. But remember, there's 60 people doing it. So if there's too many people on one side, it starts to tilt that way and all those people fall off. So it's really funny when it's not you doing it.
I got to the last round in one of the games.
Oh, congrats.
But then, like, I got knocked around, like, somehow. Like, I've also had it too where, like, at the very end of the first stage or whatever, that somebody is waiting there. They're not crossing the finish line and they're, like, holding on to you, trying to, like, prevent you from crossing the finish line. So I don't know what that's all about. I guess people are trolling people that way, but yeah, it's interesting.
Questbuster in chat says, and you don't need to totally dedicate hours and hours of time to it too. I feel like I can play a few rounds for a few minutes and not feel obligated to grind forever. That's very true as well. Like, it really only takes a few minutes to play a match. Like, you're not going to be dedicating a huge amount of time to the game. And I think that is an asset. Absolutely. And I think also should be very appealing for the Nintendo Switch. So, long story short, this game needs to make its way to Nintendo Switch ASAP. That's for sure. Otherwise, also been playing a bit of Ingress and Pokemon Go and all the location-based GPS games as I usually do. I was out walking yesterday for a very long time. I walked 8 miles yesterday, and that was all doing Ingress missions while I was playing Pokemon Go with Bluetooth. But I caught like 9 shiny Magikarps, which, you know, whatever. I was more excited because Unknown are in raids right now, which is very rare. They don't usually have the Unknown in raids. But they had 2 letters, U and T, that I didn't have yet. I had L, R, and A. So it spells Ultra. So I had L from trading from Shane, who had Celebi. And I got Dragon Con a couple years ago. So the only 2 letters that were new to me were U and T, and I got them both on my walking adventure. And those are the only 2.
And you're not missing the C?
No, it's just Ultra.
Womp. Rob.
Jeff. Oh. I get it. Okay. Anyway, but yes, I got the letters I needed, so that's good. I don't know how many unique unknown letters that gives me now, but it's at least 10, probably more. I need to count them all. So yeah, that's been my game of week. All right, we're going to get into some other news tonight, and starting off with another a follow-up to the PlayStation stuff, right, Loki?
Yeah, so one of the cooler-looking games that they showed off during the PlayStation State of Play is this game called Aeon Must Die. And unfortunately, there's some drama behind it, though. So after the whole State of Play event and they show this trailer off, there was a post on Twitter talking about how this game was stolen. So basically, what happened was the studio Limestone Games, who was behind this, 8 members of that creative team, they had resigned from Limestone Games in June based on, I guess, hostile working conditions. They had posted a whole set of testimonies in Dropbox, kind of documenting the different things that they ran into. But apparently it's, you know, poor working conditions in the studio, behavior of its chief executive, and they basically said this trailer was created with abuse, manipulation, and theft. And people who have worked on every shot of this are no longer in the company holding IP rights. Some were not even paid for their work. The real IP for the game was stolen from the creators via foul play. And then some of the stuff that they talked about in there as well, that, you know, there was very little support from the CEO, and they were hiring additional developers to work on the project. And of course, it led to severe workload issues and long crunch and all that type of stuff. So it is unfortunate that there's all this kind of stuff marring this now. And of course, Focus Home Interactive, which is the publisher of this, doesn't really seem to be involved, or they're saying that they're not involved with this, but they're looking into allegations regarding this. So it's interesting. It's kind of sucks to see this marred by this. And considering that a lot of development talent that was behind the game is no longer at the company, I mean, like, what's that say about the game actually coming out? Is it really going to be out anytime soon if all of the talent is gone?
Or how well is it going to be supported? It sounds like there's little chance of DLC. What happens if there's issues that need to be patched out? I mean, you know, there might be enough of a crew left to handle some of those things. But yeah, it doesn't speak very well of the confidence level that people are supposed to have in this game. I mean, it's one thing to support a company that treated its employees so terribly, but the reality is most people looking at the PlayStation 4 don't listen to gaming podcasts or follow gaming Twitter or any of that stuff. They're not going to know that this is going on. So they're going to say, oh, this game looks like something I might enjoy, and just buy it. But is that going to, you know, is it going to be end up being a bad purchase? I don't know. I guess the reviews will tell. It'll be interesting to see if the reviews take any of this stuff into account, because they really probably shouldn't, but it's going to be hard not to mention it. Like maybe it doesn't affect the score, but it's like, oh, this whole other thing's going on. So it made us very curious to see how this game turned out and that whole thing. ActEft in our chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, yeah, this whole situation sucks, and I think most people following this game have pretty much lost interest, including me. Questbuster says the game's forum on Steam, as small as it is filled with posts asking for an official statement or just warning people off from buying it. That's already not some good signs early on, because you do need those loyal fans to kind of push your sales day one. And if you don't have that, that could be detrimental, unless, you know, they've worked out some deal with Sony for really good placement in the store. I don't know. How do you think this ultimately affects the game's release, Loki or Dark Soccer, anybody?
I mean, delayed at the very least. I don't know.
It's not like companies haven't lost games before, lost the data for their games, had to rebuild part of it, server crashes, etc. It's something that a good developer should have a contingency plan for. They should make backups. They should have other copies. I mean, that's just common fucking sense.
Yeah.
And if they don't, and it forces them to delay, then shame on them. That their own damn fault.
Yep. Well, all right. Well, we'll see what develops with this game as it gets closer to release. And if the company ever puts out an official statement or not, but if they haven't at this point, I'm not sure they will. They might be hoping people will forget by the time the game releases. We'll see. All right, anyhow, let's move on and talk about another kind of employee uprising. This of a very different sort, though, and this with a much bigger company. This has to do with Activision Blizzard. You know, Activision Blizzard just this past week was talking about their quarter two for 2020 record results for growth, which doesn't surprise me that video games across the board are doing very well right now in this whole pandemic situation. You have a lot of folks that are staying at home playing video games, and I'm sure there were a lot of people that re-upped their World of Warcraft sub who maybe haven't played in a while, and so on, things like that. However, Some other stuff that's going on at Blizzard. It was a recent report by Bloomberg News that showed that Blizzard Entertainment specifically, there was a spreadsheet created this past week that was in response to an internal study that was done on pay disparity. And people started filling out this spreadsheet with salary. It was like anonymous, like how much are you making? How much pay increases have you got? And people started filling out with their salaries and their pay increases. And it showed that raises fell well below expectations. The findings found that producers and engineers at Blizzard can get six-figure salaries, but quality assurance, customer service, barely making minimum wage. Some internal dialogue in 2018 showed that folks were kind of struggling at their pay level, that they, you know, needed more money to get by. Because again, Blizzard headquarters is in Irvine, Orange County. It's not San Francisco, but it's not much cheaper. It's Southern California is a very expensive place to live. So, apparently a longtime employee of Blizzard said to Bloomberg they are making less than they did 10 years ago because of small raises and lack of overtime hours. They're not working as much overtime as they used to. But again, that is a very contrast to, wow, we're doing great as a company. Wow, but our employees are finding they're really not making a lot of money. And this went on to, and it's not in the story I'm looking at here, but I know the employees were really kind of starting to band together to make some specific demands of Blizzard. And I know one of them that I was reading about was they wanted Blizzard to come up with employee retention because Blizzard was losing so many people to, like, Riot Games, the developers of League of Legends. I think they're over in Studio City or something, but they're also in Southern California and other competition in the industry. And of course, you know, when longtime folks leave, that can really hurt morale and trying to have to start over from the beginning in some things and things of that nature. So, you know, Blizzard, these employees are starting to make some demands. And that's also kind of getting people to see or say, wow, this may be the early form of a union forming in the gaming industry. I mean, we do have a case of employees coming together and unionizing. It's just not under the unofficial, you know, thing that they're paying into or anything like that. But they're coming together to make some demands. And that's pretty interesting. Another kind of... Oh, yeah. No, I think this is a great thing. And I think you're going to see more companies doing it.
I was going to say one thing.
Oh, I thought you said good thing. Yeah, what?
Yeah. This goes back to something that actually should be universal in a lot of jobs where you have income transparency. You know, you work at a place and they say, oh, don't show this to your coworkers. Don't tell them what you make. This is private, blah, blah, blah. The thing is that they don't want you to tell other people so that people will say, oh, I'm not making what I'm worth, you know, for people doing the same job. And I think that we're starting to see a lot more, you know, people in other companies start to be a lot more transparent with their income. And I think this is fantastic. And I really want this to be considered a more universal example. I would love to see this encourage other people to do it. And I definitely think that this should be the start of a union. The video game industry must unionize.
Yeah. There's so much I want to say on that due to the nature of, like, what I do now for work versus what I did a couple years ago, but I really don't want to get into my day job. But there's so much, like, I want to, like, elaborate about some of the differences and fascinating things, so, but well, can't. Offline.
Well, I will say one thing, as, you know, a lot of women have learned, you know, when we start speaking out about our salaries and hearing what our male counterparts are making, mm-hmm. The income disparity becomes very obvious. What you see from across the range of diversities, you'll find people with different backgrounds making more or less than others. You'll see it across, you know, the racial board as well. So I really am so proud of all of these people with their transparency.
And I just lost Dark Soccer for a minute there. I don't know if that's a Discord crash. Oh, no, you're
back.
Yeah, it was a weird hiccup. Sorry.
I was going to say, hold their asses to the fire. Be honest, be transparent, but I want to see this turn into a movement in the video game industry.
Mm. Okay.
We must unionize.
Now, I'm not sure if the disparity in gender is something that's showing here. Just to be fair, I don't see it in this article here that that is an issue at Blizzard specifically.
I used it as an example.
No, I know, but I just want to make that clear. This is a different thing. And still bad. But one thing that is brought up is, how about Bobby Kotick as the CEO of Activision Blizzard, and what is he making compared to the average worker? Well, Bobby Kotick made over $33 million in the year 2016. That is over 300 times of the average employee. Now, there are some pro-labor groups, because I think there are folks out there trying to encourage the Blizzard folks to unionize, and they are happy to represent them and so forth. And they've done some studies showing that Kotick makes all this money because there are multiple overlapping award provisions that were $96.5 million in bonuses over the last 4 years. That is more than the total pay of any other CEO in the gaming industry. He makes more in bonuses than any other CEO in the gaming industry. So I think that is so. Dark Socrates polishing off her guillotine, metaphorically.
I might have one.
But I mean, seriously, like he's making a lot of money, and it's not really fair, especially considering what the other people in his industry are making. And I gotta be honest, Blizzard specifically, now I know he's over Activision Blizzard, but Blizzard actually Activision has not had a great last 4 years either. Blizzard hasn't had a great last 2 years. That BlizzCon a couple years ago was a disaster. And so, that wasn't good for them. So why is he getting bonuses for how that BlizzCon went over? Why is he getting bonuses for how Destiny 2 launched? Yike. So that is something the employees and so forth will have to figure out, I suppose. All right.
We need to... I'm all for this, though. I just want to see people held accountable. That's it.
I do, too. I think it's great that people are starting to more openly discuss these things in the gaming industry. And, you know, I think that the day of reckoning for... basically abusing the enthusiasm of folks wanting to work in the game industry, because that's what a lot of this amounts to. Because for so many years, it's been, well, if you don't like what you do, fucking leave, because there's 10 kids that'll gladly take your spot so they can work in video games. And you know that's been the attitude in the gaming industry for a long time. And I really feel like the day of reckoning for that is overdue, and it's coming. It's coming.
The video game industry is another industry. You know, yes. At the end of the day. And because it's such a common aspect now of everyday industry, you know, it's as common as, I'd say, any manufacturing job, massive design jobs. It's a big corporation, you know, the whole aspect of its economy is massive corporations, people that are, you know, it's like the thing now is to be the independent developer making it big. That's really going to be the bit of a rarity, just because you can say, oh, well, now I'm working at Square, you know, or Squinix or whatever. Yeah, it's cool. But in the end, you know, it's a job.
Yeah.
If it pays your bills, it would be great to say, yeah, I'd like to work for, you know, so-and-so company. That would be awesome. I love the company that I work for, and I find it amazing that I work there. I can't, you know, say who, but at the end of the day, the job that you have is as good as, number one, if you enjoy it, number two, if the company takes care of you for the work that you give them.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Blackwolf in our chat says, I actually work with several ex-video game developers. They like working in financial banking software way more than gaming. You know, that's how I feel about radio. Honestly, like if you want to make a comparison there, that's how I feel about radio. Because I used to get asked all the time, especially in the early days of podcasting, especially when we were first on iTunes and we were, you know, showing up on the news, and it was really kind of the height of this show's popularity, to be quite candid, was when we were one of the first podcasts on iTunes. I got asked quite frequently, why don't you work in traditional radio? Why don't you have a great face for radio? Why don't you go work in traditional radio? And the answer is, I really like doing radio on my own terms, because when I was in college, I studied to do TV and radio on someone else's terms, and I didn't like it. I don't have the I mean, I know I get teased sometimes for ego by Captain Matt over at Starboard Power Coupling and stuff, but I don't have the ego you need to thrive in an industry like that. Look at somebody that does very well, like Howard Stern. You know, I realize he's controversial. I'm not here to say, you know, good guy, bad guy, whatever, but we can all agree he's got an ego. He loves himself, and that's how he succeeds very well in the radio industry. So, yeah.
I have an ego, but I'm lazy.
SSJ100 Matt says, at the end of the day, someone working in a major company shouldn't have to live with 4 to 5 roommates in a San Francisco apartment. But I understand that's a different situation. Well, you also have the issue of, like, San Francisco housing. But that is, as we say, to invoke another famous broadcaster, a whole nother Oprah. So, in the meantime, let's go on to the next story. Let's talk about people who are leaving.
To put that into a little bit of perspective, what I pay in my mortgage for my house is half of what a friend pays for an apartment that's half the size.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there for San Francisco versus like where I am in Sacramento.
Yeah. San Francisco is it's
expensive.
I love it. I love the city, but I could not imagine living there the way it is economically right now. It's something else. Yeah.
I just visit my friends.
Exactly. Love okay, to see so, my friends.
Yep. Hearts. I miss them all. So how about, though, as you mentioned, other people leaving? And this one, I've got mixed feelings about it because this person has been just a big part of Capcom for so long, almost 30 years. But Yoshinori Ono has left, well, is leaving Capcom this summer. And he also left a big message about his thoughts about the criticism made to the Capcom Pro Tour. You know, since COVID-19, it has moved entirely online. But his statement, he first acknowledged that, which was, I'd say, pretty classy. And, you know, his quote says, it took a long time for us to decide the format for this year. But we believe that conducting the event itself would repay those who have been supporting the CPT, regardless of what format it is. And then he goes on to say, and now after serving almost 30 years at Capcom, I'm leaving the company this summer. This means I will resign my position as brand manager for Capcom's various titles, including Street Fighter. And he worked on a bunch of great stuff. He worked on Mega Man series, Dead Rising, Devil May Cry. But he's really one of the ones who was behind getting Street Fighter back on this forward motion, starting with Street Fighter 4. Which honestly, I think I prefer to Street Fighter V, but I digress. But anyway, he says he's really excited to see what's going to happen, to see what it's like in someone's new hands. But you know, it is a massive torch to pass on. You're going to need someone who can take that up, and then he can keep going with it. I mean, but keep in mind, you know, there's also a few things about Ono that people don't seem to remember. He got demoted twice. You know, it was supposed to say, you know, one of the things is that Street Fighter VI was supposed to be released next year, but the testing ended up being absolutely a disaster, and they hired another director to start it over from scratch.
Oh, wow.
He also gave a Street Fighter Cross Tekken, which, you know, pretty much bombed. You know, so keep in mind,
it's,
you know,
because
well,
we're
yeah.
all still waiting for Tekken Cross Street Fighter. It's true.
But at any rate, yeah. The whole thing is that while he's done a lot of amazing things, he does have some pretty big fails, you know, in his portfolio as well. So hopefully him taking a step back might be another revitalization for Capcom. I mean, I'd love them to revisit, you know, older fighting games that they did before. Like, I would love a Red Earth you know, to come out like a newer Red Earth game or just a release of Red Earth for my home system.
I am 100% with VG Realness in chat. Give us Capcom versus SNK3. That is like probably my favorite 2D fighter, period, is CVS2.
Yeah, I enjoy that. I mean, I do also, though, greatly enjoy the Marvel versus Capcom series a whole lot. But you know what I want them to bring back? Is I want them to do another Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Yeah,
but like,
weren't there rumors about that making a comeback, like a second game? I guess they just kind of fizzled.
Or better than that, rival schools. Give us another.
You've been on that. If 18 years, you've been on that one.
I have. And you know what? I'm fucking right. You know, I'm going to reply to that, say, okay, now rival schools three. I'm just going to make a trend. We're going to make rival schools three trend again, y'all. Let's get to it. If we made President Cat happen, we are going to make rival schools three happen.
There's that ego we were talking about earlier. And I was right. And I'm right.
I am right. And I will go down with this burning boat fire. You know, I am right.
She's laying right. down the blanket on that hill because she's ready to die on it.
Fuck that. I will immolate myself on that hill. Burning rage of raginess.
Nothing says I love you like setting the hill on fire with my corpse.
Exactly. And there will be a special explosion afterwards where my burning remnants will spell out kanji for she needs justice, Gakuen. The end.
Looking in chat for some other comments. somehow we got off the topic of Yoshinoro Ono. Let's see. SSG 100 Mad says, I was shocked about Ono leaving. He was the face of Street Fighter and a really neat guy. I remember him in New York Comic Con going around the show floor, shaking everyone's hands and posing for pictures and having fun. The guy was always humble and cool with fans. Yeah, he does seem to have, like, and I love seeing that guy on stage. Like, he does have a presence. I mean, I realize that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to translate to Street Fighter VI is going to be great. Like, those are two very different roles. And I don't mean to slander or talk negative of Ono because I don't know. I didn't play Street Fighter VI. I don't know what he's like from 8 to 5. What I do know is that he is great with fans and he is a real joy to see at these events with his enthusiasm and everything that he does when he talks about the games and all that stuff. So I feel like somebody's going to snatch him up. Just to be an ambassador for their product, if nothing else.
Or he's going to do something on his own.
You know, I should get my tinfoil hat. I need a tinfoil hat or something that I can put on. You ready for this? Do you know who should hire Yoshinoro Ono to do hype?
Konami? They need something.
No, good call, but no.
They need a kick up the ass.
American company. Microsoft.
Microsoft.
No.
Yep.
No.
Yep, because they need more Japanese talent, that's for sure, because that's an audience they haven't managed to draw in ever. I'm just throwing it out there. I think no matter what country you're in, his enthusiasm is infectious. Just saying.
Okay.
All right. SSG 100 Matt says, that's plausible. Well, anything is. VG Realness says, who is Konami? I don't know her anymore. Maybe we'll have some Konami news later in the show. But for now, Loki.
Yeah, let's talk about Rocksteady instead. So Rocksteady, of course, most recently known for making some pretty awesome Batman Arkham games. They have announced an announcement that's going to be at DC Fandom August 22nd for a Suicide Squad game that they're doing. And right now they've also registered the domain Suicide Squad Killed the Justice League.com.
That's a mouthful.
Yes. So basically, apparently, looks like the premise based on the crosshairs on the back of Superman's head is some sort of premise that the Suicide Squad, I guess, is going to be going after the Justice League. It sounds interesting. It's almost like a Suicide Squad version of The Boys, I guess, you know. But yeah, I'm down. I guess we'll have to wait and hear the details on that. But I know the Batman Arkham games are pretty awesome. And I, despite the movie not being that great, did like Suicide Squad. So I'm interested.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what they do.
I'm kind of with you. I'm like, you know, Suicide Squad is kind of like, but as a movie or whatever, but knowing that Rocksteady did such amazing work with Batman, I feel like they will make Suicide Squad into something that would be really good for a game. I'm trying to believe. I want to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they have the new movie coming, and that looks pretty good.
That's true. SG100 Matt says, the Suicide Squad game has been rumored for at least 5 years. That's probably how long it's been taking him to make it. I mean, these...
Well, now all we need is that Harry Potter game announcement that's been rumored just as long, so...
It won't get my money.
Didn't something leak with that? And because the whole J. Karen Rowling and her constant foot in her fucking mouth and all the shitty things she said on Twitter, I feel like some of that started to leak out with that game that they're making, and some people are trying to tell EA or whoever was making it, back away, make a generic wizard game. Don't put Harry Potter on it because she's tying herself. She is setting herself on fire and dying on a really stupid hill. So
yeah.
Anyway, SG100 Matt says they were rumored to be in development with it since 2013 when it was teased in Arkham Origins. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the games take a long time to make. So, and it's probably in like a newer engine or something. It's something where like maybe the first game will take a long time, but we'll probably get like 3 Suicide Squad games, you know, over
six years.
Or they
could just use the same engine for, you know, more Batman games, or who knows?
Who knows? Anything's possible. All right, moving on. Something that won't be coming out as soon as we thought, although I'm not entirely surprised by this, but there was a video that was released this week by Intellivision. Tommy was hyping it up, and Intellivision was tweeting it out as it was a live broadcast, but it really wasn't. It was a premiere of an edited broadcast. Okay, whatever, fine. It was a direct of sorts. We'll leave it at that. It was like an Intellivision direct. And it was fine, but it did kick off with the news that the Intellivision Amico was going to be delayed until April 2021, this after the original October 2020 launch date. And a very personal moment from Tommy Tallarico in the beginning there, where he talked about how the 10-10-20 date was really tied to something that he had promised for his sister and was openly kind of talking about, that she had passed away and was getting very emotional, which is not something you often see in, you know, CEO deliveries, but it was certainly impactful that you could tell that, you know, he didn't want to do this, but he knows it's for the best. And honestly, and disclosure, I've already backed, well, it's not really backing, but I pre-ordered Amico or whatever you want to call it. And I'm not like, I'm not mad about this. Like, it's one of these things where it's like, well, it's just another thing that COVID ruined, like, you know, but I don't blame Tommy. I don't blame Intellivision. I don't blame anything but COVID. I blame our government's mismanagement of COVID, but again, that is a whole nother episode of a different show. So it is what it is, and it's getting delayed till April as a result. I do think it's cute that they're trying to get the backer systems out now. What is it, April 3rd, 2021? So it's 4-3-2-1. Like, Tommy does have an obsession with numbers, I think. Like, he has to have... I wonder if he's like...
It's marketing sense, Rob. It's just marketing
sense. It is. But I'm kind of like, will he not release games when Friday is on a 13th? And no, I don't. I'm just teasing.
I'm just having a hard time still being interested in the system. Like, I watched the whole presentation that they had. And not to say that everything looks terrible. I think things look fine. There are some games that seem interesting, but there's a lot of games that seem very generic. Like, it looks like a generic Flash game being thrown on the system. And honestly, like, that's not what I would want to, like, throw out there as to, like, bring people in and make them excited about it. There was a shmup game that they had on there that looked pretty cool. There was some of the more retro reimagined versions of, like, I want to say it was Breakout or something. That looked pretty cool.
I think
there's something,
okay,
so that just very generic, though.
You know this criticism's coming, though, and I think something you have to remember and keep in the back of your mind is that this system's not for you.
I understand that, but it doesn't, just because it's an underpowered system doesn't mean that you can't make things look nice or put polish on them. And I guess it's still early. The games aren't out yet, but like,
it is early. And I think, I think some of the games, honestly, to me are looking good enough, especially for, you know, the fact that none of the games are going to cost over $8. I think the Breakout game looks very good. I think the racing game will be cool. Like, I could give or take the cornhole or some of those other things, but I kind of also remember in the back of my mind, you know, he really wants to pitch this to an audience and a household that doesn't usually adopt video games. This is pitching for, hey, how about for family game night on Tuesday, you try this new game from Intellivision Amico. And I think it is a little bit of a gamble, but I'm not so sat on that he's going to fail. Well, I wouldn't be if I wouldn't have pre-ordered one if I thought, oh, he's going to fail, because I don't think he will. But I think a big part of the success of this thing is going to hinge on getting the right messaging out. And I think for that reason, the three of us and those you out there listening to this and watching this probably won't be seeing a lot of it. And that's okay, because again, it's right. not really for the audience that's looking for gaming podcasts and gaming news and stuff. But if he isn't, you know, some of this came up on Bobby's show, if he's teaming up with, you know, Ellen, or, well, I guess, you know, Ellen isn't much longer for TV. He's teaming up with Kelly Clarkson, let's say, or Oprah, you know, the daytime TV stuff. That's the way to do it and to get into some of those. And, you know, I think this is the type of thing that should, like, have a booth at the state fair. And if they're teaming up with MLB, then when which they are, then when baseball comes back someday, this thing should be on display at baseball games. If they're teaming up with Sesame Street, this thing should be on display at Sesame Street on Ice. When these things come back, obviously in the pandemic world, we can't think of those things right now, but you guys know what I mean. Long term, this thing should show up at those types of family friendly events. And I think if that happens, it'll do fine. And for me, as a mid-core gamer or whatever you want to call me, the reason why I'm still kind of interested in Amico, even if, yeah, not all the games look like I'm going to be thrilled by it, but I am really interested in the retro reimagined stuff, you know, and I'm trying to put on my hat for what made Atari 2600 games good, or what made the original Intellivision games good. Sometimes it was just a very simple concept that was fun to, you know, like, look at a game like
Market
Astro
dominant.
Smash. Yeah, well,
market dominance for Atari, sorry.
Yes, but even if I were to go back to old Intellivision games, there's a lot of those I could play over and over and over again. Like Astro Smash is a really fun one, right? And they're reimagining it. Missile Command is a lot of fun, which is, I know it's weird because the Atari properties are bleeding over into Intellivision with this retro reimagining, because, you know, Breakout's coming, Missile Command's coming, and they're Atari properties, but whatever. I still think those games, they're very classic simplicity, easy to explain and get into. I think will lend itself well to that system. We just talked about, why is Fall Guys doing so well? Because you don't have to explain it. You can figure it out really easy by watching somebody else do it. And every Amico game, for better or for worse, is going to be like that. And I think there are going to be some winners and some losers. But you know what? Every console has some winners and some losers. Now, to be fair and to be critical where I should be when it comes to Intellivision Amico, I think their biggest challenge is going to be Nintendo Switch. And that $250 price tag is going to put them $50 under a Nintendo Switch, which is the other system, and that's the Disney of consoles and what you think of when you think of family-friendly games today. Now, obviously, the big difference is that Mario and Zelda and Animal Crossing, and those games are still going to cost you $50, $60. Amico is not going to have anything over $8. The make or break is going to be how well that messaging gets out there that the games are $8 or less. And that is what is key. He's got to get the message out that, yes, it's a $250 system, but the games are never going to be over $8, ever. And I think if he can get that out there, that will be what brings in the people that don't usually get into games. Because I think there are a lot of people out there that go, games are $60. I don't want to buy $60 for a game. That's too damn expensive. I can't afford
that. Especially if they're pushing to put games up to $70 and you have all the DLC and stuff, then that, yeah, that'll look really attractive.
Ooh, I love this point from Pixel Pacas in chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Rock Band Beatles sold hardcore when they had it on QVC. Not that Rock Band had issues selling to begin with, though. That's a great example of messaging in a place where you wouldn't expect to see it. Or you wouldn't, like, as a gaming hardcore fan or whatever, midcore, we wouldn't expect, oh, they sell video game consoles on QVC. Intellivision Amico? I hope Tommy's got QVC on speed dial and is booking his appearance on on QVC. That's a great idea, honestly. VG Realness in chat. That's going to be a challenging sell, I feel. Why do I need to pay $250 for a system that only has $8 games? It's going to be a mixed message to some people. So, I think that message is going to be key. So, I doubt Tommy listens to every little thing on the Intellivision, but if he's listening to this, I think that is your key need. You've got to be able to make people clearly understand the games are $8 or less. And you got to convince the soccer moms and the QVC watchers and the Kelly Clarkson daytime talk show watchers and all that. So, all right. Let's move on. We got a lot more stories to cover, including something a little near and dear to our heart. Speaking of the retro games, I suppose, of sorts that we used to play, things that Orange Lounge Radio were founded on, right?
Yeah, indeed. And this actually is going to be coming for PC, at least what it sounds like. So there is an alpha of a famous Bemani series, one that we love, that's going to be coming to PC, and that is Guitarora, as in Guitar Freaks and Drummania. There is an open alpha that's available for anyone with the Japanese Konami ID. That means I have to find mine. They're talking about it's probably going to be a subscription. There's only 4 songs in the alpha right now. 2 have classic charts from original Guitarora. And then they're also supporting guitar controllers and electric drum sets. So it'd be nice. I mean, I think it would, you know, it's a really neat thing. It's definitely a way to bring that back now, especially for people who can't really get the arcade experience anymore. And people who miss it, honestly enough. Yeah. You know, Rock Band's kind of dead for now. And SSG100 Matt says, I hope this isn't a beat and groovy situation.
It's not.
The fact that it's coming out in the Japanese market is different.
They're not trying to dumb it down for the US like they did Beat and Groovy.
Yeah, which is insulting. But anyway, in other news related to that, there is a Pro Arcade Accurate controller that you can order for release when the game's available, called the Guitaller. And it is a white guitar with a brown neck. It looks pretty neat. Has the switches and everything. It looks pretty neat. You know, I'm not going to complain about it. Looking at the pictures of it as it's being held, it looks like it'd be nice and comfortable. You know, maybe I'd say a little bit more like what the Rock Band controllers are. I think they're a little bit more on line with that one. It only is a PC one. It's coming from the specialist controller. It's a group that does specialty rhythm game controllers. DJ Dao. And so it looks really cool. We get a pretty accurate controller. I think that's going to be neat. Although what I'm probably going to end up doing if I go for all of this is get maybe the port converter for my current guitars, because, you know, I've still got all of my Bemani stuff. All of it.
You know, and
all of it.
Jason kind of name checked in the intro tonight that this is kind of the latest PC iteration of what is kind of in a long line of Bemani games making their way to PC, right? Because we had Infinitas, we had the Sound Voltex had a PC version, DDR.
The DDR one,
And so it makes sense that this is happening. I still feel disappointment that they aren't trying to, and yes, I know I can go make a Japanese account and do all this stuff. I just wish Konami loved me a little more. Like, why doesn't Daddy love me? That's how I feel about Konami these days. Like, it's like, why will Konami not, like, put the minimal resources to try to give this a U.S. release, especially when these games are at Round 1 arcades, which, yes, I know we're not going to right now in a pandemic, but someday we'll go back, you know? And I'm just hoping, like, again, I would love to be able to play these games and know that it's in the U.S. It's licensed for the U.S. It's something I'm, or it doesn't, like, it's region free would really be the most ideal thing. I'm not trying to sound like America, no one else. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to say, like, I wish it was open to all and made for all, you know, if
what I want to see is having the American market taken seriously again. Sort
yeah.
of like how it was going when DDR was really reaching its popularity over here. Although it makes sense with this being developed by the Japanese division that all the testing would be in Japan. So I'm not really.
Yeah, I'm trying to let it go a little bit because you're right. And this was the same point that was brought up when I screamed about the DDR thing. I was so mad about it. And, you know, yeah, if it's an alpha or beta and they're only testing it in Japan, okay, cool, whatever. It would be still nice. It would be nice if Dad would call me and say, I'm sorry. It would be nice if Konami Daddy would call and say, son, I'm sorry I'm not going to see you this year, but I plan to see you next year. Can't Konami make a phone call and say, we're working on it? That's all I want. A Christmas card. All right, anything else?
I think Daddy needs to be spanked. Daddy's been a bad daddy.
Okay. You're going to get us a ban on Twitch for 24 hours. You better be careful. All right.
Hey, you're the one who bringing up Daddy into this.
All right, moving on to our next story quickly. Loki.
All right, so another thing that was kind of came out around the time of the PlayStation, their little event, was another exclusive character that's going to be coming to Marvel's Avengers on the PlayStation. Spider-Man will be exclusive to Marvel Avengers, and it is probably because that Sony has this, you know, the rights to Spider-Man licensed for like movies and stuff. So I'm sure that they have it also on the console side as well with their exclusive games and whatnot. So apparently it'll be a free update for PlayStation players that's coming out when the game comes out in, I guess, early 2021. So it's going to be exclusive to the PlayStation in September. And then apparently PC and Xbox One players won't get to actually play as that character. So I don't know. That's such a major character. It's kind of irritating that that's the case. But I get it, I guess, because they have the rights to it. But the way I look at it, it's not necessarily that, you know, you're basically selling me like an inferior product then on the other platforms is the way I look at that, which is kind of annoying.
This shit has happened before, though, and it was annoying I don't know. It's sometimes annoying and it's sometimes not. I'm actually going to give you an example of when it's not annoying, and that was Soul Calibur 2. Now, that's a throwback.
Well, that one's different, though. Yeah, that was different.
But yeah, everybody kind of had their own thing. Well, do we know that will be maybe Microsoft will get their own hero?
No, I doubt it. I mean, right now they haven't announced anything. So, I mean, it would be cool if that was the case. I just don't think that there is anything right now. No. I don't know. It's stupid politics. So,
DJ Rama S says, and Xbox fans are trying to get a petition going to block that exclusive. LOL. There's always a fucking change.org for anything. Let's see. Questbuster in chat says, Avengers has a closed pre-order beta going on. I've seen some streams of it. I have some concerns. That was my general kind of feedback is I don't know that this news is a great thing for this game because I can't help. And I want to just clearly say, didn't watch any of the beta streams. Haven't played a lick of the game. I am in no position to judge this game, whether it's a good game or not. I can't shake this shaking feeling, this sinking feeling, that this game is doomed.
I hear people aren't really impressed with the beta so far, so I don't know. I'm just going to wait for it to come out. It looked interesting at first, and then when I saw the trailer, it's kind of, to me, looking more like Elder Scrolls Online, where like the more trailers and the more information I hear about it, the less excited about it I am. So right now I'm kind of like, eh, it just looks like an average action game. I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I just, there's a lot of games for me to play, and especially with like Cyberpunk right around the corner. I don't know. I don't really care.
Yeah, I just, this is just some not good news on top of the pile of, I have Anthem kinds of concerns for this game. Let's just put it that way.
Sorry about it.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, but yeah, it's, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, if you're still Team Microsoft, which there's no problem, there's plenty of reasons to be Team Microsoft. Oh, I want to read this comment real fast. VG Realness in chat says, I was already meh about the game. Now the announcement about Spider-Man, I'm just very meh about it. I feel like it needs more character options. I don't feel like playing the ones they have. Not enough diversity in the characters. They're all punchy, punchy, throwy, throwy. Okay, not all, but most. Pod Culture says, Mr. Smush is the Xbox exclusive character. We could dream. All right. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit, though, about what's going on the Microsoft side of things, because even if they don't have exclusive content for the Avengers yet, they do have something pretty big happening on September 15th, and that is Project X Cloud. Project X Cloud is going to be launching on September 15th on Android devices. There is some controversy definitely going around because apparently Apple is not allowing it through. We'll see if they'll work that out by September 15th, because again, I'll kind of let Bobby's show kind of speak to this. I feel like if Spotify got their way eventually, Netflix got their way eventually, I feel like this is going to get worked out too. But as it stands, it's only coming out on Android devices on September 15th. An Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription. So not if you are PC only and not if you are Xbox only. You have to have an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription. So if you have this, it will allow you to unlock the game streaming on xCloud. Ultimate, of course, will set you back $15 a month after initial offers to get you hooked. Over, I guess, 100 games are going to be included, but they're not saying the whole library yet. But that could also be because games come and go on Game Pass. Don't know about that.
Yeah, probably. I don't think that they're like blocking anything, unless there's like, I don't think there is, but unless there's like somebody that has like, I have exclusive streaming rights with like the NVIDIA platform
or something, who knows, yeah.
Or like EA, you know, it's like, we want our own streaming platform, which I think they have their own streaming one that they're trying to do. Maybe they're like, well, we don't want you to stream our games or something.
Regardless, I think it's pretty safe to say all the Microsoft Game Studio stuff is not going to be a problem. And that's your Halos, that's your Gears of War, that's your, you know, Fable reboot and all this stuff. That's what a lot of people are going to be checking out anyway, you know? So we'll see. We'll see what kind of slips through the cracks otherwise. Now, xCloud is also supposed to be coming to PC later this year, so you'll be able to stream Game Pass titles to desktop or laptop, which is weird because you can download a lot of the same games. But I understand, you know, just based on people's setup or what have you, they might want to stream to like a laptop or who knows what. So, yeah, we'll have to check that out when xCloud comes out on September 15th. So we'll see. I know a lot of people that have been playing with the early beta and stuff speak very favorably of it. So I'm curious to try it myself and see how it works out.
Or those fancy new phones that are being released as well, you know.
What do you mean?
You can stream to those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, all right. I think, are you good to go, Dark Sakura? I know you had a little spill there, so you're cleaning off cam. Okay.
I have some older kimono fabric that got soda on it, which means it went right in the gentle cycle.
Yikes. All right. Well, yeah. Hopefully that's all better. All right. Meanwhile, let's get to the classic game of the week then, where every week here on the show, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, kids, get off my lawn, number one. Number two, watch me do a trick on this hill. Number three, go check out this classic game, where she's going to walk into the gaming vault and find a game that she thinks all the kids should be checking out. And
which I have a few copies of it.
And I think this one is one that a lot of our listeners will remember. This is a very transformative kind of game. What is the classic game of the week?
Classic game is Virtua Racing. So, and you've also seen it as VR. But it is a Formula One racing arcade game that was developed by Sega AM2 and released in 1992. It was originally considered to be a proof of concept for trying 3D graphics, and it was supposed to be under the Model 1. Because it looked so good, they actually fully developed it as a standalone title, and it was full 3D, which, I mean, Namco did it first. They did Winning Run, and then Atari had Hard Drive-In. But this was like a vast improvement over those. It actually ran relatively smoothly in 3D, and it pretty much is considered the foundational game for 3D racing games in general, and for using polygon graphics for games going forward.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the footage of this game that we're watching on Twitch, like, you know, and to hear you say this is 1992. Like, those are that's the early days of the Super Nintendo. So it's like putting this side by side with F-Zero is it's like, dang, these graphics are but I also remember this arcade game. This was like you had to pay a whole dollar to play this game. Like, it was not a cheap arcade game. You know, and it maybe it's probably showing its warts all these years later, like the draw, you know, things kind of pop in, the draw distance isn't amazing, all that. But again, if you put it in your 1992 hat, like, this game for its time was transformative. This is what led to Grand Theft Auto and everything else. Sorry, go ahead.
And even for the games that followed, I mean, like Sega Rally, for example, Daytona, you know, while those were all textured, you know, this one here is in its beautiful, raw, and textured glory. And this is, you know, what we had. I was playing this when I was in 10th grade, so, you know, I sucked at it. But at any rate, the original arcade game had three levels with its difficulties. So you had the beginner, which was big forest, and then you had the Bay Bridge as the intermediate, and then your expert level was the Acropolis. And then each of them had their own feature, like an amusement park in big forest, or the bridge for Bay Bridge, or the hairpin turns on Acropolis. So when you select a car, you've got your transmission types. You know, your automatic or your standard. You also have the VR view system that lets you choose four different views for the game. And it was used in a lot of other Sega racing games, like Daytona. And it even was in the home ports, which we're going to get to in a moment, please. So as for the cabinets, there were a few different cabinet versions. There was a twin cabinet, which was the standard one. It was effectively two arcade machines built into one cabinet. And these were, you know, pretty widespread for these. However, there was there's Zenith Picture Tubes in the Wells Gardner 25-inch monitors. Actually ended up having a manufacturing defect that caused them to fail after a few years. So many of those machines were either parted out, and they're a lot harder to find today. The twin cabinet sold everywhere else used the 29-inch Nanal monitors. So you won't find those older ones that much anymore. But they were the first releases. They were the common ones at first. There's also the deluxe version, which is the VRDX cabinet type, which is a single-player machine and has a 16:9 aspect ratio Hanterix monitor, which was one of the first uses of widescreen aspect ratio monitors in an arcade game. Six airbags, so one on each side, three on each side, that would inflate so that you would be nudged when you're cornering, or move the airbag to, you know, pull you back while you're braking. So it's supposed to give you the that feeling of motion and resistance. And as for a few other things, it also had a fully adjustable forward and back seat that used the air pressure for it. It also had force feedback steering that used two pneumatic cylinders to rotate the steering wheel, which was different than the electric motor and clutch system that were used before. So the steering would feel a little bit more true to life. Virtual Formula ended up being released in 1993, and it was unveiled at the Sega's second arcade amusement park, Joypolis. And there was a room with 32 machines dedicated to it. So Virtua Formula was a Super DX version of VR, and it put you in a full motion hydraulic Formula One car replica in front of a 50-inch screen. And a lot of these units were converted into their IndyCar simulator, Indy 500, found at Sega Gameworks in the U.S. And I think that we saw one at, I think there was one at the Gameworks in Seattle when we were there.
There was.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I believe that these same overall cabinets I've seen used for Daytona. And it was... I think it was roughly around that same time. Well, they had similar for Daytona, because it was the first time I saw Daytona at the Sega Arcade casino called that's Egyptian-themed in Las Vegas?
Luxor.
Luxor, thank you. At Luxor. And that was roughly around the same time I was in high school, I think, yeah.
I just want to comment.
We're all like cars.
I just want to comment on the video again real quick, which sorry to the podcast listeners, but we're watching another level, and this is the Bay Bridge level, which is really the Golden Gate. But I'm always fascinated, which obviously the geography is completely wrong. It's just an excuse to put something that looks like the Golden Gate in the game.
That doesn't look like Sausalito.
But it's not nearly long enough. But the funny thing is, racing games always have a fascination with San Francisco. Like, San Francisco, like, always... And it's because of the hills. It's because of the iconicness of the Golden Gate. So it's just... It's interesting to see it in this game, too, because I feel like
I haven't seen a windmill in San Francisco.
A what?
A windmill in San Francisco.
No, yeah, there's no windmills in San Francisco. So some of this stuff is very random. But it's fine. Like, you know, again, it's just invoking those sorts of images and making you think of that.
Yeah. Anyway, going back to all the cabinets from Virtua Racing, they're linkable for up to 8 players, so 4 twin units or 8 DX UR or Virtua Formula cabinets can be linked together, and you use fiber optic cables for this. There was also an optional display called the Live Monitor that would sit atop the cabinets and replay action shots of what was happening game with kind of like a virtual sportscast with a commentator named Vert McPolygon. I know. For the home console versions, now I'm going to be a little bit more verbose about the Sega Mega Drive or Genesis as we had it here in the U.S. This one was honestly, when this came out, it was big shit, okay? They couldn't do the game because of how complex the Model 1 board was. They didn't think they were going to be able to do a home console version, but in 1994... they created a cartridge design that used the Sega Virtua Processor, which basically is an extra chip that enabled you to play a version like this on the Mega Drive, on the Genesis. It was really expensive. So the games, when they came out, they were $100, £70 in the UK. And for what it did at the time, it was pretty amazing. It rendered 9,000 polygons per second in game, which was much higher than anything the Genesis was capable of at the time otherwise. However, you cannot use this on the Majesco Genesis 3, and it will not work on any Genesis that's equipped with a 32X, for obvious reasons. Now, speaking of the 32X, yeah, there was a pretty awesome port, Virtua Racing Deluxe, which is pretty fun, and it was developed directly by Sega AM2. It was published by Sega under Sega Sports, and it performed very closely to the arcade version. It had 2 extra cars, one called Stock and the other Prototype, and 2 new tracks that were called Highland and Sand Park. Now, of course... The good version, the one that was at the time the most accurate one that you could get, was the Sega Saturn. It was the working title was Virtua Racing Saturn. It was released in 1995, and it was developed and published by Time Warner. Of course, you could put the CD in and play the game, you know, like a music, as long as you skipped, you know, the tracks, because it was all Red Book audio. I've got rips of the audio somewhere, you know, and unlike the other versions, it has a Grand Prix mode, where you're driving a series of cars and tracks to earn your points as you go along. And then there was a remake called Virtua Racing Flat Out on PS2. It was released under the Sega Ages 2500 label. It was released in Japan in 2004 and did get an American and European release in 2005 as part of the Sega Classics collection. Had three new courses and four new cars. And now, and you know, we're seeing more of these Sega Ages ports now on the Switch. So yes, there is a Virtua Racing for Switch. And it was released on April 24th, 2019 in Japan and elsewhere June 27th, 2019, developed by M2. It is an absolute port of the arcade original with an increased frame rate to 60 frames per second and in the 16:9 aspect ratio. You can play online with up to two players and up to eight players on a single system. It also has online leaderboards, downloadable replays for the top 50 players on each track. An easier steering option and the Grand Prix mode that increases the total number of laps to 20. And guess who's back? Vert McPolygon.
Yay.
He cameos in the replay.
Love it.
So it was very well received. It was listed in 1992, their 1992 issue in October of Game Machine as their most successful upright arcade unit of the year. And it was also very well accepted, of course, here in the U.S. The Japanese Gamest Awards, it was nominated for Best Action, Best Direction, and Best Graphics, but it lost to Street Fighter II Champion Edition. And then Art of Fighting, and then Zexus, which Zexus and, of course, Street Fighter II have been past classic games. I don't know if I've done Art of Fighting. Maybe. EGM called it a racing masterpiece and said, lifelike racing sensations are extremely impressive and exciting. So, yeah, it really got good reviews. The home versions got pretty great reviews. GamePro loved the 32X version. They said actually that it addressed the longevity of the Genesis version with adding more stuff and giving a little bit more replay value. And it was in 1994, it was on Mega's list of, it was fourth place on Mega's list for top Mega Drive games of all time. And so, I'm really surprised I haven't done it before, but, you know, too. Kind of on this AM2 kick. So there you go. Virtua Racing.
Your classic game of the week, Virtua Racing. One that yep. I think many people in their 30s and maybe even like late 20s probably remember seeing this game in an arcade somewhere and how cool it looked at the time. And now it's... Now it's being revisited all over again by us here at OLR. So
indeed.
Some comments on the use of San Francisco oftentimes in racing games. We're talking about that in chat a little bit. Bobby Blackwolf pointed out probably also because many gaming companies are in San Francisco. And I was like, oh, yeah, Sega used to be in San Francisco. They used to have that iconic building where 80 and 101 kind of met. And the Golden Gate is 101. I mean, you have to kind of go through the city to get to that part of it. But still, like, you know, Sega had that iconic building. It's no longer there. It's the Zynga or was the Zynga building. I don't even know if they're still in it. But I don't think so.
I think they're out.
Yeah, you couldn't miss that Sega logo when you used to go by there all the time. And then Dark Tetsuya said, oh, yeah, that might explain the first Crazy Taxi. Also a Sega game took heavy inspiration from San Francisco as well. So interesting point that, you know, with all the development that happens in the Bay Area, go with what you know, so to speak, in what you develop. So that's kind of interesting. I just always thought it was because of the hills. You know, people wanted to do – because everybody fantasizes about going 100 miles an hour on those hills, which is something you should never do in a real car. Jesus. Like, those hills are actually not fun in a car.
Ask Ranma about the experience being in a car with me going about 90 doing a spin in San Francisco.
The hills,
there for that.
The hills in San Francisco are the most overrated part of San Francisco, to be real. They're beautiful, especially when you're looking out from Alcatraz.
The story.
But...
There's a story.
DJ Ranma just put three dots in chat, so I'm not sure he wants to hear this.
It's called an ellipsis.
Still.
It's called an ellipsis.
Okay.
Anyway, I wanted to take him to Treasure Island. And so I was just about to miss the turn, and this was the Lancer. So I effectively drifted going on that on-ramp to Treasure Island. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, good times.
I'm glad we lived, and I'm glad I didn't get a ticket.
But I'll give you my little San Francisco trick for all those of you guys that ever want to go visit. The easiest way to get around San Francisco, take your car, park it on top of a hill in a neighborhood, because all the parking's free on the street at the top of a hill, because nobody wants to park there and walk up and down a hill, and then take Uber or Lyft wherever you need to go. It's going to be cheaper than parking. That is my tired and true how I get around San Francisco.
Even better, get yourself a clipper.
Yeah, I was going to say, find a friend that knows that transit system like the back of his hand, such as our mutual friend.
You don't need anyone to do it for you. My iPhone will just tell me what buses to take in San Francisco.
I'll still get on the wrong one.
I'm bad with the trains right now.
Right. All right.
Usually I get JD to help me.
All right. Let's move on. Let's get into some rapid fire news and quickly talk about some other news going on in the industry. Loki.
Well, I'm relieved that even though we talked about a game-breaking bug in Paper Mario Origami King, that they're already patching it. And so as of right now, patch 101 is available, and it'll actually fix the issue that they had in the Spring of Rainbows and Shangri-Spa, and along with other issues that were apparently blocking progress in the game as well. So that's a relief. Now I can finish my game as soon as I ever get the console back from everybody in my household. Also, coming to the Switch, Pikmin 3 Deluxe, which was an announcement that happened. Apparently, it's coming October 30th. Can we get a different game instead than Pikmin? I mean, really? Can we not get another Pikmin game, please?
Yeah, I'm not a big Pikmin person either, but cool for those that are. Like, I know some people were really excited about it, so yay for you.
I'm guessing we'll be getting more announcements for more games coming to the Switch.
Yes.
Later. I think just one of those in between things.
This is definitely a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it.
All right. Then for what I was going to talk about, I have a couple quick stories here. So Loki kind of spoiled this one already earlier in the show, but that's okay. Cause we'll talk about it outside of just PlayStation. Braid Anniversary Edition, which Loki brought up earlier, is also coming to the Nintendo Switch. So, this new version of the game is going to have some new mixes and like an upgraded soundtrack, if you will. It will have some hand repainted graphics, some all new animation, and you can switch back and forth between the old and the new Braid. So it sounds like the Wonder Boy Monsters Trap and, you know, those types of games where you have the button to switch back and forth, which is always cool. They're also talking about extensive developer commentary. So maybe we'll find out if the ending is supposed to be deeper than the fact that you were the I guess I shouldn't spoil it for those that still haven't played it after 12 years. But it is a game, you know, I don't know. I feel like this game kind of has some mixed things, because I think some people saw that movie. And so not everything about the development of the game was portrayed in a positive light. But like, I know that the critics really loved this game and embraced this game. And it was an interesting twist. I will say that the ending, even the game mechanics, was an interesting twist on the old formulas. And you have to remember, this game came out when Xbox Live and the whole like digital to you game thing was really starting to take off. So I do think Braid is transformative in many ways for the industry, and it is something that I'm not surprised we're revisiting. It's just kind of a weird time. It's a random time for it, I guess, but okay, whatever. Anyway, Fall Guys, which I think is also going to be a big game in our industry, just wait. They are talking about bringing the game to other platforms. It's an official FAQ on the game's website that talks about, will the game come to Xbox or Switch? To start with, Fall Guys will only be available on PS4 and Steam. We'd love to bring the game to other platforms further down the line. Please let us know on Twitter and Discord which platforms you'd like us to release on next. We'd love to see how much demand there is, which is code, I'm sure, for we're already on it. Please look forward to it. All right. Dark Sakura, what do you have for us?
Oh, this and that. One of them just makes me laugh my ass off, because I'm working on a novel right now, so I know how much research goes into writing. And this is historical fiction. There is an author named John Boyne, who's had other controversy about him. He's wrote a historical fiction novel called A Traveler at the Gates of Wisdom. And he made a boo-boo in referencing a recipe for red dye. And I will read it in all of its glory. I will get to it. The dyes that I use in my dressmaking were composed from various ingredients depending on the color required, but almost all required nightshade, sapphire, key swings, the leaves of the silent princess plant, octorok eyeballs, swift violet, thistle, and hightail lizard. I employ spicy pepper, tail of the red Lizalfos, and four Hylian shrooms.
Love
yeah.
it.
And now, though, I mean, and this was the screenshot was pointed on Twitter by a writer named Dana Schwartz. It was actually first posted by somebody else, but they've deactivated their account. But it's just, it's absolutely hilarious. And so the writer himself, he admitted to it. He's like, and this is the quote from his Twitter. Hey, Twitter, does anyone know how one would go about dyeing a red dress? Asking for a friend. Now, of course, Boyne has been in the news before for other faux pas and big ones. The Auschwitz Museum stated his book, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, contained many inaccuracies about the Holocaust and should not be used as teaching about the genocide. Mm-hmm. And then his novel in 2019 called My Brother's Name is Jessica has also met with extreme criticism from the trans community for misgendering characters and that he rejected the word cis as a controversial term, even though it's a fucking accurate word. So get over it. But at any rate, yeah, dude needs to cross-reference shit when he's doing research. I swear to God. Anyway, I'm working on my first book and I know better, okay? So, anywho, we had covered Warner Brothers, the gaming division being up for sale. Well, that ain't happening now. So they have released an amendment saying that they are still their own. They remain part of the Studio Networks group. They are completely still their own entities. So yeah. Not happening.
All right.
At least right now.
All right. Well, we're going to go on to world release dates and travel around the world and check out what games are coming out near you soon. However, I do need to sneak in one more news item here because it does relate to the Voice Geeks Network and some of our personalities here at VOG Network. I want to give a shout out to Bobby Blackwolf because it is actually confirmed. And if you've been listening to his show, you've kind of heard about like some of this, like the process he's gone through to get here. But he will be a part of Summer Games Done Quick as one of the announcers. So he will. He did get, even though he fell in the backup category, it turns out they gave the backup hosts one shift, basically. So you can check out Bobby Blackwolf. He's going to be announcing during Summer Games Done Quick. And if you want to check him out, it's going to be Wednesday, August 19th at about 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. I say about because you never know if the speed runs are going to go short or long or whatever. But the speed run he's going to be a host for and doing the not the commentary because the guy on the couch or virtual, it's all virtual, right? But the guy actually doing the speed run does the commentary. He's going to be reading the donations and all that stuff. That is going to be for Devil May Cry 4 will be the game that he is kind of going to be announcing for. One thing he wanted to stress, though, so I will pass this along as well. Summer Games Done Quick is about the charity, Doctors Without Borders. It's about the speedrunner. It is not about Bobby Blackwolf or VOG Network. So you're encouraged to go donate and give money and all that good stuff because it is a great charity. But don't go there donating going, VOG Network, blah, Bobby Blackwolf, I love you, blah, because he does not want the focus to be on him. And in fact, it might actually kind of have a negative effect. So it's really about the speedrunner and the charity. So let's focus on those things. And let's just be thrilled that we kind of like, you know, we already kind of knew somebody there because I know Jason's been volunteering for a little while. And now it's like, now we know somebody that we'll see like on the stream too. So that's really cool how more and more folks here at VOG Network are getting involved with that. So I will definitely try to check out that stream next Wednesday. So not this coming Wednesday, but next Wednesday. And I think that's really cool. So congrats, Bobby. All right. And congrats to Summer Games Done Quick for still doing a marathon, even in this whole pandemic-y situation, and making the necessary adjustments to the virtual thing to do it. And I still think they're going to raise a lot of money, and it's going to be a great thing, especially for an organization that could probably use it right now with a fucking pandemic going on right now, because even though America might have this thing under control by 2021 and some of the other, you know, big nations and so forth, there's going to be a lot of countries on the planet that don't have this COVID thing worked out in 2021 yet. And so, you know, an organization like Doctors Without Borders is going to be very instrumental in making sure that COVID doesn't spread in other countries as well. So very cool. All right. Yeah, and SGO100 Matt with a good tip. If you want to support Bobby, donate for the host announcer choice of donation incentive. So that's another thing you can do there is let him choose the donation incentive. Okay, that shout out being done. Let's travel around the world and check out some release dates. Loki.
All right. So in the U.S., we have a few games coming out, starting off with Hyperscape on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. We have Risk of Rain 2 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Color Cross Malice Unlimited on Nintendo Switch. Total War Saga Troy on PC. And then we have EA Sports UFC 4 on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. That's it.
All right. I'm slow in bringing up the Japanese releases. Can we go out of order and do the UK next, Dark Sakura?
Sure. It's only a handful. On the 13th, we have UFC 4. We have Deliver Us the Moon. And then there's also Beholder Collector's Edition for Switch.
All right.
Not too much.
It's kind of a slower week in Japan as well. So looking at the releases over there, on the Nintendo Switch, we have Ancestors Legacy on August 11th. And that is the only release on the Switch. Taking a look at the PlayStation 4, we have EA Sports UFC 4 gets a Japanese release on the 14th. And otherwise, that's it. It's a pretty slow week in Japan as well. So there's your release dates around the world. Our next segment is the mailbag. So every week we invite your emails at participate@orangeloungeradio.com. And we read your emails here on the show. However, my understanding is, Dark Sakura, you went to the mailbag and it was
bare.
Empty. It was naked. It was born naked and the rest is drag. So that means drag discussion, right?
I started watching We Are Here.
Oh, yeah? How's that?
Yeah. I only got through the first episode. I figured I'm gonna not binge it. I'm just gonna do like an episode here and there. And oh my gosh, I had some sniffles. It was very beautiful, and I love Shangela even more. I've met Shangela a couple of times, who's just the sweetest person in person. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying this show.
I didn't watch that, but I did watch Muppets Now on Disney Plus. And you might think, what does that have to do with drag queens? Well, RuPaul's in the first episode, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. But also, I would say that the original drag queen was Miss Piggy.
I could go with that.
I like the Miss Piggy parts were the only parts where I was laughing out loud. Because I watched the first episode and there's a Miss Piggy segment, which is great. And I was howling because Miss Piggy is hilarious. But then there was this whole Swedish chef thing where like the joke was old fast. And then the RuPaul thing was the joke was also old fast. So I really hope the other episodes of Muppets Now are better than the first one. Or have more Miss Piggy, the original drag queen.
Yeah. So, all right. But, you know, I've been also listening to a little bit more historical podcasts and talking, followed actually if you like 60s and 70s drag personalities. So it was actually kind of cool to learn more of the origins of drag and actually performers from the 1700s that.
When Lady Bunny started, right?
Oh, yeah. No, Lady Bunny was well before that.
Okay.
She was helping people buy their sandals.
I forgot.
Criticizing the Roman government.
She was the entertainment on the Mayflower. I forgot. Yeah.
Rob, she was the meteor.
Anyway.
I love you, Lady Bunny. And Lady Bunny is also really fun to chat with. I'm just going to throw that out there. I love Lady Bunny. And if you are not following Lady Bunny on the Facebooks and Twitters, get ready for a political ride. She is very astute. But at any rate, I've been enjoying all this stuff, really getting a little bit more into, like, I think learning from techniques now and things, because I'm, you know, as a sister, I think I can always grow, because, I mean, that's my drag. So that's it.
All right. Well, let's get back to video games. Sorry, Loki. I know you were really enjoying this discussion, but maybe
it was a drag.
It was thrilling, and I paid attention to zero of it.
Maybe you have a video game related story to bring us back. Oh, by the way,
sure.
Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send us emails.
So we can talk a little bit about the about Twitch and how the U.S. Army is coming back to it as well. You may remember we talked about a few weeks ago how they had been kind of blocked from Twitch because of some of the recruiting techniques that they were using. Like, for example, posting fake giveaways and contest pages like that, really to try to get your contact information to contact you about, you know, recruitment. Plus, they were banning people who were asking questions about different things that weren't necessarily abusive, or you know, for example, there was certain individuals, I guess they were asking questions about war or whatnot, and they were being banned from that. And since it's a government entity, it's technically illegal for them to be banning folks from being able to speak or comment on different things. So now, of course, we have a comment from the U.S. Army esports team, which is reinstating access for those accounts that are previously banned for harassing or degrading behavior. The team is reviewing and clarifying its policies and procedures for the stream and provide all who have been banned the opportunity to participate in the space as long as they can follow the team's guidelines.
I'm going to give some free advice to the U.S. Army. You ready? Because I do this with a lot of Twitch channels that have big chat rooms. Just don't read the chat. Now, you might be thinking, Rob, this is the show where every gamer has a voice, and you read chat all the time. Okay, we don't have 5,000 people watching this stream either. And if we had that many people watching the stream, I would beg and ugly plead somebody to help me screen chat comments, okay?
Also, if you had 5,000 people in chat, you probably can't read the chat because you'd be scrolling by.
Exactly, just be emojis, yeah. So y'all have been very nice and well-behaved in the chat room. We've only had like a couple incidents, and Bobby Banhammer, Black Wolf, and the rest of our mods, you know, met it with swift justice, which is great. So y'all know I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about those much larger chat rooms where it's just it's too much and like it's impossible to read. So I would just encourage the Army, just stop reading chat. Just stop reading chat. If it's going to hurt your feelings that bad, don't read chat. All right. Anyhow, I guess great that they're back on Twitch. I will not be watching. Okay.
No, I wasn't before, and I just think I don't know. It's still it's just somebody better be watching to make sure that they're not pulling the same garbage again. Not that there's really going to be any consequences for it, sounds like. So we'll see.
All right. Well, moving on. Let's talk about the Nintendo Switch and how it's selling a fucking ton of them, basically. Some new numbers from Nintendo's first quarter of their financial year. So in the three-month window until June 30th, 2020, so that would be what, April 1st to June 30th, 2020, they sold 5.68 million Switch consoles in just those 3 months. No wonder you couldn't find one when house arrest began and this whole pandemic thing going on. This means that lifetime sales are at 61.44 million. To put that in perspective, it is less than a half million behind the NES, the classic 8-bit NES that was in so many households that they now have Lego sets dedicated to. That is how many Switches are out there. So that's a lot. Something else to put in mind. Animal Crossing New Horizons is now up to a lifetime sales figure of 22.4 million units. To put that into perspective, it is the second best-selling game on the Switch, period. You know what number one is? Anyone want to guess? That doesn't know the answer already. What's the number one game? Darksoccer, any thoughts? I'll give you a hint. It's had more time to sell.
Oh, Breath of the Wild.
Very good guess, but that's actually like number five. Another good guess, but it's not in there. The top selling game
Mario
is
Mario Kart.
You got it. It's Mario Kart 8. And it's not that much ahead. So it seems almost likely that Animal Crossing will overtake it to become the biggest Nintendo Switch game. And that is huge for this franchise. Animal Crossing is officially bigger than Mario or Zelda. Stew on that for a minute. Not yet, technically, because Mario's card is still the number one, but probably this time in a few months, it's going to be Animal Crossing is Nintendo's biggest franchise. It's something to think about. Again, certainly the pandemic has probably played into that as well. Orange Wright says, I'm surprised they haven't made DLC to cash in on Mario Kart 8's deluxe success. Why would they do that when they're hard at work on Mario Kart 9, if the rumors are to be believed, or the Captain Obvious is to be believed? Of course they're going to make a Mario Kart 9. I mean,
yeah. They did DLC already. They did two pieces of DLC.
And the only question really is, like, what's going to be like the twist in Mario Kart 9? You know, what are they going to do differently? Because Mario Kart 8
It'll be exactly the same, just more Mario Kart.
Probably. But is that a bad thing? I don't think so.
No, maybe they'll have more characters. Since, you know, Animal Crossing is going to be their number one selling franchise, they can have Animal Crossing characters in there.
Nook. Isabelle was already in the last one, but yes.
Well, more Animal Crossing characters.
Because the Animal Crossing Village was the second DLC pack. The first pack was the Zelda one. The second pack was the Animal Crossing one. So, something to think about. Nintendo also teasing at the announcements that Paper Mario the Origami King had just come out. They talked about the Pikmin remaster. So it looks like Nintendo will probably have another really good quarter this quarter as well, especially with this pandemic continuing on. And more people are escaping to Animal Crossing, which I never even talked about.
Battle Royale.
I never even talked about Animal Crossing during my game of week. I'm getting so frustrated that I'm not getting more pictures from villagers. I'm giving every single one of them gifts every damn day, and I still don't have anybody's picture but Ketchup, which she's the most important, but still.
Rob?
What?
Do you want to know what happened?
What?
You want to know who left?
Ooh, who?
Dina.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, I've got a card to give you of her anyway, so you can have her.
Yeah.
But I waited too long to replace her, and now I'm getting Graham, who is this derpy looking little hamster. And Dan's excited about it, but now I need another female character, so Octavian is getting the boot because I have his picture.
Yeah, I think I told you. I guess this happened last week. I lost Joey, the duck that never wore pants, like Donald Duck, and I got. Boots is my newest one, who's like a jock alligator.
I know who Boots is.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, he showed up on my island like August 2nd. His birthday was August 7th. So I was like, am I even going to be able to give him a gift? But I was able to give him a gift.
If you talk to him for 2 days, then yeah, you can give him a gift.
Okay, good, yeah. So I gave him one of those iron door things, and so he put that out on his house. And I even customized it to green, because he's an alligator and he's green, so... thought he'd like that.
Well, anyway. I'm gonna probably I don't know. Well, you know who I'm gonna replace Octavian with is Anka. Because I have
Anka's cool.
Or Anka. So, and then I will eventually go back on my hunt for Audie. We'll see.
Dark Tetsuya says, I'm trying to get Boomer. I just had a spot open up, but I haven't found him yet. Boomer lives. I have Boomer, actually. He's my only, now since Joey left, he's my only lazy type. If he ever offers to leave Dark Tetsuya, I'll let you know. Although it would have to time up just right. Like, he's got to be in boxes the same day you have an empty house. So it doesn't always work out. But I'll let you know if Boomer ever leaves. So.
Well, I am never getting rid of Zucker, who is my lazy special child.
Yeah,
he talks to the bugs in his floor.
I won't let Ketchup ever leave.
Well, Zucker loves his bugs, so I gave him a termite mound so he can have his bugs 24/7.
That's like Boomer. He's like obsessed with bugs and taking a nap.
You know what's funny? And Dan and I were saying this, that even though these are like set personality types, they have the same dialogue, you know, etc. It's like looking at their little body types and who they are adds a different air of personality to them. Like, we were talking about how Rosie and Apple, okay, Apple's this, you know, little squishy hamster annoying pink thing. And Rosie is a cat, you know, she's one of the classic ones. Everyone knows Rosie. But we were like, Rosie's just like, Dan's like, yeah, Rosie's kind of full of herself. And, you know, she's like the idol girl. And while Apple had the same personality, she was so much the wannabe.
Yeah.
You know, or like... with your jock characters, like, we have Dom, and he's a jock, you know, sheep. And he's this fluffy little guy. Like, where's all of his muscles? He's a fluffy guy.
And let me ask this question of Dark Tetsuya. Why not Cube if you want a penguin? Cube's still in the game, right? He was like he was the most desirable villager in the original game because it was like Cube on the GameCube and it's a penguin. Cool. Although
I may have a card for Cube.
I'm not one to criticize choices in villagers. Like, you know, you like who you like. So, but I would.
There's
love
people
to have
I will
Cube.
Judge for. There's ones I will judge for.
Who?
I still know want if they're Antonio. On my island. I still want Antonio though, because Antonio was cool.
Antonio's on Alan's island.
Yeah. But anyway. At any rate, there's just some that just like really like. I'll be honest, that pink gorilla one. What was her name?
Oh, Rocket. I liked her.
I don't like Rocket. She just. I finally let her go. Honestly, don't like any of the gorillas.
Whatever. All right. Yeah. We should probably move on to the next story. Sorry, Jamie. We see an Animal Crossing, like 2 hour chat every week.
New podcast, Animal Crossing, all the time.
Right, or a special live stream on VOG or something. Animal Crossing all day, every day.
Come over to one of our towns and
don't tempt me. I'll do a random Animal Crossing stream on VOG.
Girl, I'll do it.
If you're willing to join me on Discord, let's do it. Let's do it this week. We'll talk.
If it's a day that I can, sure.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah. Okay. No big whoop.
No big deal.
So, is it me?
Yep.
It's me. What do I get to do? You know, I have been saying I like Gamer X to come back. I love all the fun, you know, gaming events. GAYMING. Well, there is a British media outlet called Gaming Magazine that has announced it will be holding its first Gaming Awards, a ceremony in 2021 that offers recognition to community streamers, games, companies that, quote, offer positive and inclusive support in the representation of LGBTQ community. Don't forget the A. The A is important. I am the A. Mm-hmm. They have a global panel of over 20 judges in the community who will, go through the nominees and go through and offer nominees based on these criteria. So we have the Game of the Year, categories. Game of the Year, Authentic Representation Award, Best LGBTQ Character, Narrative, Indie Game, Streamer, Industry Diversity Award, Special Recognition Award, and Gaming Magazine's Reader Award. So, stay posted. Keep a lookout for it. And for those in the chat, I'll link the tweet to it. So if anyone wants to follow this, there you go. But look up Gaming Magazine. It's their handle is at Gaming Mag, GAYMINGMAG.
All right. As a gay guy who plays video games, I'm excited to see something like this. It does kind of seem like it kind of like came out of the blue, like this magazine just decided, hey, let's throw this event and maybe people will show up. But I guess that's how all good ideas start, right?
I think it's a good thing. We definitely need more of it.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I'll check it out online. I mean, I ain't going to be able to fly to London, not in February 2021, and check it out in person. But I'll probably still be banned from the UK then, but I'll definitely check it out online. So there's that.
Yeah.
All right. A few more stories for you guys before we get to taking your questions in the listener roundtable in our chat room. Loki, what do you have?
All right. So the World of Warcraft is getting a tribute for one of the Twitch streamers, Rectful. So they're going to be honoring him. He died apparently last month from suicide.
Yeah.
And so with that, they're going to give him a NPC that's going to be located in the Cathedral of Light in the Shadowlands. So that's pretty cool. I like how they do these kind of tributes and stuff for these players. It's nice. And then apparently if... You can say hi to it and stuff. And then basically he'll say, I don't train assassination rogues. I guess it's a reference to his time in the top of the PvP ladder, it says. So interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was trying to prove a point that because assassination was like the big thing at the time, it was like one of the strongest builds. He was proving that you could do PvP without the assassination build.
And I think something that was important to remember about Wreckful, though, I mean, I can't claim to have watched his streams all the time, but my understanding is he was not just a popular and large World of Warcraft streamer on Twitch. He was an early World of Warcraft streamer on Twitch. So one might even argue, like, you know, helped to shape the streaming community on Twitch to what it is today. I'm sure there's lots of players who are very happy to hear this and pay tribute. And yeah, you've mentioned sometimes folks who have left us in the real world do get some sort of memorialization of World of Warcraft. I can think of another one off the top of my head. I know in Horde House back in the day when I still had that side podcast about World of Warcraft, we talked to somebody whose husband had been memorialized in the Wrath of Pandaria. No.
Yeah, and there was
Mists of Pandaria. They're all in the Mists of Pandaria expansion. So
there was also like one of the developers, the dwarven statue.
Yeah, there were a few developers. There was the dwarven statue, and then there's, you know, people still with us, you know, that have been turned into like Leroy Jenkins is an achievement that I don't think you can get anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I got it.
Yeah.
But you know, there's that's one thing that I've always given them, even if I'm not going to be playing anymore. How they've at least had this bond with the community.
Oris Akdev says in our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, Akdev says, shows us again that the actual devs at Blizzard do give a crap. So, you know, despite all those other things we were talking about, you know, early in the show, which again, that has to do with mismanagement and people at the higher level and the Bobby Kotecks who are money hungry and all this stuff. And the people that are actually in there doing the work on the front lines, like, are very kind and, you know, will do these types of things for important community members. I think it's really cool. Like, you know, again, I don't like to talk about my own mortality, but I think I've even said this like just a couple weeks ago on the show. If anything, heaven forbid, should ever happen to me, I would be so hopeful I would be memorialized as a Pokestop or something in these games, you know, some of the games that I've loved over the years. Final Fantasy 14 would be amazing. Or WoW, Warcraft. I loved Warcraft for many years, you know, so anyhow. All right. Well, moving on to a game that is very old, but in many ways hasn't aged, and has really shown us many other types of first-person shooters since Quake. And QuakeCon 2020 happened this weekend, although, of course, it was all online. It was a virtual convention. But part of the virtual convention was that you can get the original Quake for free. And it's something that you can actually play on a newer PC. It has to be done through the Bethesda launcher, so ain't nothing really free in this world because you got to put that on your computer. But it is. I actually checked it out myself and downloaded it because I had the Bethesda launcher anyway for something else. It's cool to get to play the OG Quake again. I don't know how mod support works or any of that stuff. I don't know if it's easy to put in Team Fortress or whatever, I know it's there. And they are saying... Quake 2 is supposed to be following very soon. Now,
and Quake 3 also.
Quake 3 is the best one. I hope so.
Quake 3 is also supposed to be free as well after, apparently it says, we'll be free in the BethesdaNet launcher after QuakeCon if you logged in during QuakeCon.
Now,
so it's not...
Yeah, I was just going to say, because no one special in chat says, I just looked at Bethesda's launcher store and Quake is $1.50, not free. So it might have just run out by the time we were on air. So sorry, I guess it should say Quake was free this weekend. Womp womp. But do keep a lookout for Quake 2 and 3, because again, Quake, I didn't care for Quake 2 as much, but Quake 3 I thought was a really strong game.
Yeah, and that'll still be through the launcher as well, of course.
Nice. Oh, yeah, they got their $10,000 donations. That's cool. Great. All right. Well, that is it for the topics that we had planned out tonight. But if you have something you want to bring up, you can do that in our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Maybe there's something we haven't discussed tonight or you want to get our opinion on that we haven't talked about yet. In the meantime, I will turn to Loki and see if there's any last-minute stories.
No, because you took my one in the very beginning about the controllers leaking.
Oh, my
aside
bad.
Aside from that, there is absolutely nothing else to talk about.
Yeah, I have to be honest. Like, I had to really dig to fill out the show roll tonight. I think we had a bunch of, like, they were all good stories, but it was just enough, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, if we're wrong, if you guys have an additional thing you want to talk about, please, by all means, speak up in chat. We do have a chat from No One Special in our chat. Says, roundtable question. okay, so most of us, if not, and by the way, for the podcast listeners who aren't here live, the name in chat really is No One Special 77. I'm not being like, oh, this they're nobody special. That's actually their nickname. Just so we're clear, I'm not a total asshole, just partial. No One Special asks, roundtable question. Okay, so most of us, if not all of us, love retro games and retro collections, and they're semi-popular on services like Steam. That being said, if you could have any game from the 1990s re-released for Steam, what would it be and why? Ooh, see, now it's the 90s, so I can't go to my go-to Guardian Legend answer from 1988 or 87, whenever that was out. So what do we do from the 90s, gang? What game would you like to see re-released from Steam? Virtua Racing.
I don't know, when did Rival Schools come out?
I might say, you know, and I talk about this game frequently as an old favorite on the
1997. It counts. Sorry.
Okay, it counts. On the NES and Super Nintendo, there was a series. There was it was Solstice on the NES, and it was Equinox on the Super Nintendo. And I think a lot of people knew Solstice. I don't think hardly anybody knew Equinox. But it was that rare Sony ImagineSoft game on the Super Nintendo, because this is before Sony had their own thing. And I loved Equinox. I loved the music. I loved the type of game it was. And there's games, I guess, that are kind of like it, but I would love to have like an official release of those type of games kind of come back on Steam. Or I guess if you wanted to go way back to PC stuff, I mean, think about some of the games I've talked about as classic game of the week previously on the show. And you probably got to go way back. But there was a game I used to love to play in the 90s that was over modem. It was called Lexicross. And I know I've done this as a classic game of the week, but it was like a game show that was like a word puzzle. It was like a Wheel of Fortune mixed with like a crossword puzzle type of thing. And you could play over the modem and actually play against somebody else. And I thought that game was tons of fun. So I love that. So,
I would say Point Blank.
Oh, that's a good one. You know, our buddy YYR released a really good Point Blank inspired game called Sharpshooter, available on Steam. Cheap plug, cheap plug. So there's that.
Yeah, I see that there was a Point Blank DS game, which I completely forgot about.
I forgot about that too.
A thing. But yeah, I would like to see a new Point Blank. Would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Pixel Pacas in chat says, freelance writers for the popular visual novel collection Lovestruck won a significant pay increase from their publisher, Voltage. They had a strike for 21 days because they were being paid under market rates. See what I tell you earlier in the show. This is the beginning. Like, this bubble on the whole, like, unions and folks that, you know, again, and I, as I said earlier in the show, folks that are taken advantage of because higher-ups know that there's so many people that are enthusiastic and wanting to get into the industry. Like, the bubble's going to burst on that very soon because, honestly, you have so many people now that are just like, you know what, if this is the way I'm going to get treated, fuck it. I'm going to make an indie game. I'm going to make my own game studio. I'm going to make the next Fall Guys and be, a huge successful success.
So apparently, doing a quick Google search for Point Blank, apparently Gunbullet X is a thing, which is a brand new Point Blank game that came out in 2017 arcades.
Oh, rad.
And it's all in HD and stuff. So I guess we already got that. I'd still like it on Steam, but, you know, at least it's a thing.
Dark Tetsuya in chat says, it's not 90s, but I wish Capcom would release their early 80s arcade stuff on Steam and Switch. They had a pretty decent arcade collection on the PlayStation 3. It was in like five parts. And I don't know why they haven't gone back to that. Because, you know, Sega goes back to that every generation. There's some fucking Genesis collection that'll come out, you know, with something new or whatever. Awesome. And some of the, like, the Sega Ages stuff is pretty great. I wish they would compile all of those on one disc and release that.
And speaking of Capcom, how about Power Stone? Can we get some more Power Stone, please?
Yes, good call. Power Stone. I'm all for that on the Switch. Let's bring that back. Yep. I think that's one we can all agree on. So that's the answer to your question.
That was Capcom and Eidos. Can we get, if Capcom's not willing to do it, can we get Eidos to do it?
All right. There's the official answer. There's the official OLR-approved answer to your question. No One Special. The game we want to see is Power Stone. All right. Yeah, Orange Wright says that's one of the few reasons I turn on my Vita is Power Stone Collection. Good
yes,
call.
That's true. They have that there. Surely on the Vita TV.
I really wish PlayStation 5 would do something with my Vita library. I know it's asking for a lot, but man, I would be so happy if I could just like play my digital Vita purchase games on my PlayStation 5. Like I know I'm reaching. I know it's a big ask, but how awesome would that be? Ugh.
They should be able to emulate it with the power of the PlayStation 5. I mean, come on.
I get angry when I think, because like the best version of Final Fantasy IV is on the Vita, or actually it was on the PSP, but also Vita. And then Power Stone Collection and Luminous. And ActDev says, I want Tyco Vita on
Luminous.
My TV. Like, yeah, my God. That's what I want. Sony, help. All right. That's going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Then we're going to start to wrap things up here by getting everybody's final thoughts. But first, I want to thank you guys for tuning into our show tonight. Of course, we do tape live Sunday nights at the Voice Geeks Network, starting at about 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern. We don't ask for your money or anything like that. We appreciate the bits and love the follows and all that, and really, really appreciate all that stuff. And so I want to say thank you for that. But you know what really, really helps the show is word of mouth. So if you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, tell a friend or two about the show. That word of mouth goes an awful long way. The hosting is awesome, too, on Twitch, if you're willing to do that. But even if you just show up every week, we're happy to have you and really appreciate that as well. A nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or Google Play, wherever it is. Although I heard podcasting is going away in Google Play and moving somewhere else. So wherever it is you found this show, appreciate that type of word of mouth, too. All right, with that, let's go around and get everybody's final thought for the night. So, Loki, we'll start with you tonight. Your final thought.
I'm hopefully going to build some more Legos on stream. I don't know. At some point, we'll get around to it, I guess. I'd like to do that.
My final thought is definitely want to play No Man's Sky this week. I'm feeling invigorated having helped Delvin out through those first few stages, and someday we'll play multiplayer. I've got to stream Animal Crossing this week now with Dark Sakura because I'm really into this idea. And only one other person sent me their code for a Dream Island, but we'll go visit it if nothing else. And number three, there's a Final Fantasy 14 patch finally after a long wait this week. And I'm very, very excited to play that as well because it's the conclusion to this latest expansion story. So I'm really excited to explore that. And they are finally taking the chop to the Realm Reborn content. So if you thought your biggest problem with Final Fantasy 14 was it takes too fucking long to get through Realm Reborn, good news. They're cutting it way down this next expansion. That's a great thing. Or I'm sorry, this next patch. That's a great thing. Last but not least, Dark Soccer, your final thought.
So I decided to go ahead and look up the character stuff for Shadowlands. And one of the undead literally has the Elvira hair.
That's awesome.
It's the best thing, yeah. But no, another thing is just make sure you are registered to vote. Make sure you get everything that you need to vote by mail and then vote accordingly.
Or be prepared to drop off your ballot in person.
Yeah, and vote early because, you know, mail will be slow.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Do the thing. Make change happen.
Yeah, I would really think as long as you're, you know, if you're immunocompromised, this still might be a risk for you. But if you're willing to, like, put on a mask and just generally stay away from people, drop off your ballot in person.
Do it.
I think the best way to do it.
I'm going to spend every episode like the end of Drag Race. Register to vote.
Are you going to dance around with a sign that says register to vote?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay. All right.
I'm also sending you the Elvira hair.
All right. That is going to do it for my first hands-free episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you so much for listening to the show tonight and checking out our show. We will be back again to do it all in 7 days or another week. And who knows what type of new. Maybe we'll get another surprise Nintendo announcement. We can dream. Right? We'll see. Until then, have a great week, everybody.
All I have to do is dream.
No, all you have to do is climb that hill and make a deal with God. All right. That's it. We're out of here.
That's running up that hill.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.